Meeting will come to order. We don't yet have a quorum, so we won't be taking action for a bit. And authors who are in the room or on the committee, you see the length of our agenda, and so we should say something like, the shorter your presentation, the more likely we're going to be sympathetic. Representative Lanning moves House File 1938. Representative Lanning.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you for moving this up on the agenda. I didn't realize we were number one until just now. I'm shuttling back and forth with the Property Tax Committee. This bill is in support of a multi-county regional proposal. We've had 12 counties up in west central Minnesota that have all been struggling with the pressures being put on their county jails. And oftentimes what they find is that the increase in people who are incarcerated because of methamphetamine or other chemical dependency are really putting a tremendous burden on their jail system in all these counties. And they have gotten creative, and they have decided to come together with all the other counties that were struggling as well and see if there would be a possibility of working together on a facility, a treatment facility, for those who need to be held.
Representative Lanning, I'm going to interrupt for a minute because you have a delete all that
yes.
takes a significant part of the bill out. Representative Lanning moves the DE1 amendment just to get the bill before us in the form he desires. All in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed, motion carries, and the bill is now before us as amended. Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I wasn't sure if we were ready to deal with the amendment, but Senator Langseth is carrying this bill in the Senate, and he has requested that we take out reference of corrections rather than having this be considered a correctional facility. Instead, we're talking about a secure facility that would be providing treatment to those who have violated the law and are in need of that chemical dependency treatment. And so this amendment would take out the reference to it being a correctional facility. And I have a number of testifiers here today, and we'll keep it very short and brief. And Mr. V.J. Sethi, who's a coordinator from Clay County, and Mr. Riaz Aziz, and also David Hauser, who's the county attorney from Otter Tail County, if they would join us here.
And you're being joined by Mr. Sethi and Mr. Aziz?
David Hauser.
David Hauser, okay.
And I'm David Sethi, Madam Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Mr. Sethi, are you first?
Yes, Madam Chair.
And please identify yourself for the record.
Yes, Madam Chair. My name is Vijay Sethi. I'm county administrator for Clay County. And we also have with us today Commissioner Dean Paulson from Polk County and Mr. Riaz Aziz, county coordinator from Polk County, and Mr. David Hauser. And David is the county attorney for Otter Tail County. So what I'd like to do is just take a few minutes introductory in terms of giving very brief synopsis as to how this thing came about and what we are doing in terms of the local commitment. And then I would like to ask David to take a few minutes, just very quickly outline as to the rationale for this thing. So basically, this whole effort started out about 2 or 3 years ago, where, as Representative Lanning mentioned earlier, that the counties were experiencing issues with respect to the use of the drugs in the county jails and issues associated with the transportation and the social services, the courts, and so on. And we recognized that individually the counties would not be in a position to deal with this because, A, that the medical services needed medical treatment, as well as the mental health treatment that is needed for this, is simply not available in small rural counties, and so there's a need to address this from a regional perspective. And that's where the idea was born for 11 counties or 12 counties to come together. And we have worked pretty consistently since then in coming up with a proposal. The counties have together jointly committed $65,000 to initiate a study, a very preliminary study that would look at the feasibility of something like this, operational programming, a very quick architecture program, and then it would look at the potential sites. However, we need assistance from the legislature for a major portion of this program, and that's what we are hoping to receive through this bill. We have also been working with the Minnesota Department of Human Services, as well as the Department of Corrections, the Supreme Court, and the judges in 7th Judicial District, and we have their full support, and we are hoping that this facility, when it comes together, it would truly be a regional facility that would have a cooperation from not only the counties, but from the various state agencies involved. I think I'll stop at this point.
Representative Murphy, did you have a question to this testifier? Representative Murphy?
Madam Chair, I do. I have a question about the regional aspect of it. Is this cover just the West Central area, or is it the whole judicial district?
thank you for your question, Representative Murphy. Basically, the 12 county area actually spreads across all of 7th Judicial District, or most of the 7th Judicial District, and part of 8th Judicial District. And there are issues with respect to that, as you may be aware, and in terms of the need to transport the patients and across the judicial district boundaries. And we've been working with the 7 judicial district judges to help resolve that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then one other question about Representative Lanny. You said this would be a secure facility, but it wouldn't be a correction facility. It's a treatment facility. But what would happen then? Do they go to the treatment facility before they are sentenced?
Maybe I can answer. The plan is
Mr. Hauser, and just for the record, identify yourself.
Okay, I am David Hauser, Otter Tail County Attorney. And the clientele that we're looking at are criminals who need chemical dependency treatment, or you could say chemically dependent people who are doing criminal acts. And so what we're saying, a very secure facility. We're not talking about just a locked unit on a typical chemical dependency unit.
I understand that.
Okay.
But at what point does the person that did the criminal act enter the facility, and is it at the end of their incarceration time, or is it at the beginning instead of?
Probably more of that. Probably more of the instead of is what we're looking at, because I think really we're looking at people who might otherwise be going to prison. And as you're probably aware, a lot of the judiciary is departing from the sentencing guidelines, and people are not going to prison who under the guidelines ought to be. And these are people in part because they need a chemical dependency program. We want to get them that. We also want to get them off the streets until they have been treated.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just one more question.
Mr. Murphy.
This design study, or for the study and report to the legislature, are you talking, do you have a set number of beds in mind, or will the report determine the number of beds?
I don't.
Well, I think the
Mr. Suffy?
Yes, Madam Chair. We are hoping that the study will help us identify that. The preliminary number that we are looking at is 60 beds at this point in time, but I think it needs a little more study as to the estimation of the exact number.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any concluding? Mr.
Hauser? Part of the study is to find out those things exactly, how we would implement the program and how it would be used when we would get people in. Would we get people in before they're even sentenced, which is oftentimes a good time to get people when they're facing the court system for the first time. They're more susceptible to saying, yes, I want help, but you got to get it to them. And also it's a nice alternative to prison where, frankly, people aren't necessarily getting the chemical dependency treatment they need. And so we think we can keep a lot of people out of prison by treating the chemical dependency problem, because people tend to commit ever more serious crimes when they don't get treated.
Representative Jucky had a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if it's a question or comment. Representative Lanning, I agree with your bill. But I think before we go here, we have to have lots more discussion. And I wish Representative Howes was here. You're asked for money for the Human Services Department. I don't know if that's the best place or not, because over the last many years that I've been in this legislature, they have closed regional treatment facilities at Fergus Falls, at Wilmer, at Walker, at Brainerd, at St. Peter, Moose Lake, saying we don't need them. We're downsizing. We're moving to 16 bed units for MI. There's no need for this anymore. We have fought and fought and fought trying to say there is a need. Representative Lanning, you're recognizing that need. But this is a very sensitive issue because of that. And, you know, I think it's interesting to talk about, and I think there is a need, but we had 24-hour secured facilities very close to you people. And they could be utilized, and in fact, we still have chemical treatment at Wilmer and dual diagnostic treatment with MI chemical, and they are in 24-hour locked facilities. So the question is, before we go developing entirely new systems around this state, perhaps we ought to step back and review what we already have. We already have a workforce sitting at some of these places. There's still chemical dependency counselors and staff and nurses and doctors at Wilmer. I agree with you, but I think it's broader than just coming in and saying we need to get some money and design a facility for West Central Minnesota, because we have those facilities, or we had them, and we're struggling to hang on to them. And I don't think Human Services is a place to go because of what they've done across the state to those facilities. So that's just my comment.
Sounds like advice. Representative Lanning, perhaps, to that.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Junkie, for raising the question. Obviously, I wasn't involved in the decision to close down the regional treatment facilities, but we need to keep in mind that this is a different kind of facility in the sense that these are people who have violated the law. And I don't know what percent of the folks in the various regional treatment centers that have been closed down were actually committed there because of breaking the law, but I know it wasn't all of them, and maybe not even the majority of the folks who were there. This is a facility that is intended for people who have broken the law. But the part of their situation is they are chemically dependent, and as I think all of us know, the correctional system today is inadequate when it comes to helping turn people's lives around and providing the kind of treatment that they need. So that would be, I guess, my response to the question.
And again, Madam Chair, just briefly, again, I'm still suggesting all those people are still there out in West Central Minnesota. A lot of those people that come to these regional treatment centers were committed by the courts there for treatment. That is their sentence. So that is exactly what it is. And I will tell, I'll meet with you privately, Representative Lanning, too, and tell you about a project we're working on with the counties and the state of Minnesota right now in West Central Minnesota that you're probably not even aware of. That's maybe another model you might want to look at, too.
Any further testimony? Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, or members, Mr. Sathry, where's your northern or eastern cutoff as far as counties go?
Mr. Scotty?
Thank you, Representative Leader. We basically generally are following the association of Minnesota counties boundary. So to the north, I think Clay County is as north as we go, and then to the east, we go as far east as Todd County. So we have Clay, Becker, Wadena, Todd, Otter Tail, Wilton, Grant, Traverse, Douglas, Polk, and Stevens. I should mention, though, that since we got started with this process, there is a significant amount of interest among counties, neighboring counties, and Wadena County was not in our original scheme of discussions, but then they contacted us and said that they would like to be a part of this process. So there may be more counties who might be joining us.
I think there are no more questions. And so we thank you very much
for
bringing this issue before us. Members, we had we were waiting for a representative. Oh, so we should wait. Okay. Does he want us to wait for that? Okay. But he's not. Is Representative Kunin? Yes, right there.
Madam Chair, I would move House File 1682 to be heard and laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Representative Kunin. And if you're joined by whatever testimony, we're obviously moving very quickly.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, for taking the time to hear this bill. It appropriates $2 million from the general fund for a water project at the Upper Sioux community. And with me today is Mr. Jensbold, chairman of the Tribal Council at Upper Sioux, and he'll tell you a little bit about the water project.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kevin Jensbold. I am the tribal chairman for the Upper Sioux Indian community located on 1,400 acres, approximately 130 miles west of here near Granite Falls, Minnesota. I do appreciate your time and consideration for our request today. Our request is based on Indian Health Service preliminary report in regards to our water system. There were two distinct issues that have been identified as potential deficiencies within that system. The first is the design itself. Our water system is linear in design, which means our wells, the placement of our wells, are at the extreme eastern edge of our system. And that does limit us if there is a break or a failure along that line. Potentially up to 90% of our tribal members, our businesses, our government offices could be impacted if there is a failure. The one issue that the report addresses is a additional storage on the western edge of our tribal lands, which would allow us to maintain uninterrupted service to tribal lands if there was a failure or a break within that system. It allows that to us to redirect our water whichever way we deem necessary. The second part of that, it also creates the possibility through this storage tower as well as additional water mains to identify new sources for a clean water supply, whether that be development of new wells on our western edge or potentially accessing alternate sources. We've identified Lincoln Rural Pipestone Water Association as a potential supplier to the Upper Sioux people. This would allow for future development, residential and commercial, into the foreseeable future. Right now, our wells are functioning at close to capacity, and it does limit our ability to further develop residential areas as well as commercial areas. If our wells fail or there is a lengthy interruption of service, Approximately 50 residences will be affected. All of our tribal government offices and our services to our people, as well as our tribal enterprises, our propane business, our hotel, our RV park, our convenience store, as well as our gaming enterprise would be affected. In that sense, approximately 420 employees would be affected. We are probably the largest employer within the Yellow Medicine County where we are located. We provide health benefits to each of those employees at a cost to the tribe that we supplement that. And it is our desire and our hope that you will look favorably upon our request to assist the Upper Sioux community so that we can meet our demands not only today but into the future for our tribal members as well as those people that are employed and depend upon the Upper Sioux community to maintain that employee-employer relationship. I want to thank you, Madam Chair, for this time.
Questions of the author or the testifier? If not, thank you for bringing this issue before us.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.
Representative Fritz. Ms. Galvey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move House File number 870 to be heard and laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Capital Investment Finance Bill.
Representative Fritz, welcome to the committee. And you're joined by one testifier, or two?
Two, Madam Chair. Thank you. Madam Chair and members, I'm Representative Patty Fritz from District 26B, and I'm happy to have the Honorable Mayor from one of my towns in District 26B from Medford, Minnesota, Dan Kaiser, and I also have Kim Christensen, our new City Clerk of the City of Medford. And we have a handout. I hope you all received it, a very nice handout they worked on till late last night, so the page handing those out. All right, very good. Thank you. We come before this. I don't know if we've been before this committee, but we've been here before. Water problems in my district, and appreciate you hearing from us again. We have a 40-year-old facility in Medford. It was built in 1968. And I have the mayor here who will do an excellent job of telling you about the problems that we have. But I just wanted to add that when I was, Medford is only a few miles from my home, so we go there often and know quite a few folks down there. And this water issue is really been a problem. And when I was out campaigning, I heard it over and over and over again. So I hope you'll pay close attention to the mayor. Thank you.
Mr. Kaiser, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I will be brief, especially with your earlier statements of your paper. Seriously, I will not go through that handout I had. That's just to demonstrate to you that we do have a serious need in our community. As the representative said, that we have been up to St. Paul in the past concerning this issue. This issue actually, the process began back in 1997, 98 is when the need was identified. We've been moving forward with the Pollution Control Agency in attempts to get funding. As the representative said, it's a 20-year-old plant that's 40 years old, and plain and simple, we run out of duct tape and band-aids, and we simply have to do something. We have been in violation with pollution control. We can't meet permits. We have come to an agreement with the Pollution Control Agency that if we do complete some interim improvements by April of 2008, that they've extended our permits, we were to the point where possibly a strong possibility would stop growth in our community. So thankfully, we come to an agreement with the Pollution Control Agency, and we are on the funding list for 2007 for $1.4 million in improvements. Some of this funding would go towards the entire project. some of it obviously can't. But the long and the short of it is that we need to upgrade our treatment facility, which we've been fortunate that it's lasted as long as it has. It certainly will service our growing needs. We are very fortunate that we have a growing community, and our projections are that we will continue to grow both residentially and commercially. So I appreciate your serious consideration in the matter, Madam Chair, committee members, and any questions.
And does Ms. Christensen want to add anything? You're here for questions. We're just working
Madam
our...
Madam Chair, she is actually my support. So.
Questions of the testifier or the author? I think you're off the hook.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, thank you.
Yes.
Did we move the bill?
We did. Yes, we did.
Okay, I didn't hear. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
I think we'll do, how about Representative Liebling is here. Why don't we? Representative Liebling, are all of your testifiers here?
Yes, they are.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I would move House File 1375 to be heard and laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Capital Investment Finance Bill.
Deb Liebling, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I appreciate the opportunity.
And we're taking you out of order, so members will have to just sort through their list to get the packet.
Well, Madam Chair, House File 1375 is for design money to start the process of upgrading and expanding the Mayo Civic Center in Rochester. And I see everybody's still sorting through things, but maybe we could just start to talk if that's okay.
Yes,
and
please.
People will catch up with us, I hope. What we're asking for... It's $5.5 million in the bonding bill, and this is planning money, and this would let us start to do the design for the expansion of the Mayo Civic Center, which will allow Rochester to capture an exciting mix of regional, national, and international conferences. Many of these conferences are in the area of healthcare and medical research, and this would complement and enhance Minnesota's leadership position in these fields. These types of conferences require space and advanced meeting technology that we do not currently have. As you'll be hearing from our testifiers, and we will remind them to be brief, as I know the committee has a lot to do today, there are a lot of missed opportunities for us to bring new visitors and their dollars from outside the state of Minnesota. Many of the current conferences go to places like Sioux Falls, La Crosse, Chicago, Cleveland, and the coast, and there is no reason that they couldn't be coming here to Minnesota. So we do not view this as competition with another area of the state. We believe that we would be bringing in business we wouldn't otherwise have. And so to explain this in greater detail, I'm going to introduce to you Ardell Brady, who's the mayor of Rochester, and also I have with me Brad Jones, who's the executive director of the Rochester Convention and Visitors Bureau. Thank you very much.
Mr. Brady, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, and thank you for the privilege of being able to address you this afternoon. I am Ardell Brady, the mayor, and had the honor of being the mayor of Rochester since 2003, and we're here today, obviously, to discuss the request for some funding for an expansion of the Mayo Civic Center in Rochester. And I think you've all got the brochure, probably by now, that's been distributed that describes the project and the importance of this facility in Rochester. We have over 5,200 hotel rooms with space available for conventions. And according to our information, this is the second most rooms in Minnesota in a city. We have over 11,000 employed in the hospitality industry, the second largest segment of our economy. And attracting convention visitors is vitally important to our economy and the economy of the entire state of Minnesota. And it is our main priority at the Mayo Civic Center. We are the convention headquarters for southeastern Minnesota, northern Iowa, and southwestern Wisconsin. This proposed expansion, we believe, will greatly expand the convention business in Rochester and the area, particularly in the area of medical conventions where we have a unique niche, and it will stimulate economic growth. Our focus is to increase international, national, and regional visitors to Minnesota. And at the same time, I want to mention with the new University of Minnesota campus that's downtown, will be downtown Rochester, they consist mainly, will consist mainly of classrooms. The Mayo Civic Center will also be the facility that they would use for their symposiums and conventions that are with the educational aspect of the community. The project is a $70 million expansion and renovation of the Mayo Civic Center. The facility will be expanded and updated with technology improvements to attract new business that we cannot accommodate in our current facilities. The main additions are additional meeting rooms, banquet space, and technological improvements for which we are seeking the design funds only in this year, 2007. I'd now like to have Brad Jones, who is the Executive Director of the Rochester Convention and Visitors Bureau, explain briefly some of the conventions that we cannot accommodate currently due to some of the upgrades that we don't have that we'll intend to include in this project. Mr. Jones.
Mr. Jones, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mayor. Madam Chairperson, thank you, committee, for your time today. Rochester is a growing market, as many of us know, and that's no exception with our convention and meetings industry. We've grown that industry in the last 2 years 35% each year. So we've experienced a dramatic influx of people coming to Rochester, namely for medical conventions, technology conventions, research conventions, these types of things. We've also experienced problems with dates and having dates available for groups into the future. As you look at our convention calendar, many of our future dates in 2009, 2010, 11 have 3 and 4 dates deep. So if one group books, we're telling 3 other groups no, they can't come to Minnesota and Rochester. So with this expansion, we're able to accommodate those groups, but also, more importantly, go after a market that ourselves, Mayo Clinic, and also the University of Minnesota has really identified as our niche. We'd be adding 190,000 square feet of new convention space to the existing facility, which would enable us to accommodate these groups that we've lost, which you have a report of, our last year's lost groups, which equate to about $28 million in lost spending for the state, $42 million in lost spending to the city of Rochester. You have a list of our top 50 targets as it relates to the medical industry, and these are groups that are currently meeting Chicago, Cleveland, East Coast, West Coast. So this is a new market for really the state of Minnesota to go after, and we would really go after them hand in hand with our community players to bring them to the community. If we did land these 50, and this is the tip of the iceberg, if we landed them for one meeting for each group, it would represent almost $60 million in spending to Rochester and to the state of Minnesota. So, as I said, this is really the tip of the iceberg as it relates to medical tourism and medical meetings, conventions, and research conventions. As Ardell said, our city is growing, and we have 5,200 hotel rooms to fill. We do a good job of that, but we need business on the weekends and our need dates. And you'll notice that Rochester is really convention-ready. This facility, with its expansion, we don't need a whole lot of more infrastructure than this facility. We have the skyways, which connect 2,000 of those hotel rooms. We have the restaurants. We have the transportation in place. So really, this is the piece of the puzzle that's missing and why these groups aren't coming here presently.
Members, if you've noticed as we've had hearings through the session, we've tried to group things so that we had a kind of a flavor of a particular type of project, and sometimes we have included some overview. Today is our catch-all day, and we have a variety, but we do have a number of bills today that come around the subject of convention centers, arenas, cultural facilities. And so what we did, we won't have a department up there with an overview, but what I tried to do is go back in time with a bit of a history on these kinds of facilities. We did take out, there was a period of time under Governor Ventura that you remember that a number were vetoed, and so we've taken those out. There were others that were passed by the legislature, but that did not happen. And so since we're beginning this discussion, Pages, if we could just distribute this to members for your information only, not related to this. Questions of the author or the testifiers? Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Mayor, who runs the Mayo Civic Center?
City of Rochester.
And what kind of a board does it have?
The park board actually has that, so there's a park board that manages the parks and the civic center that I appoint or recommend to the city council.
And
Representative Murphy.
And Madam Chair, Mr. Mayor, how many members are on the, is it the park board, or is it the, then there's a sub board for the civic center?
Staff of the civic center support the board, but there are seven members, one on the commission that basically runs the convention center and the park. One from each one of our wards in the city, and a president of that of the commission, park commission.
Thank you. Other questions of the Representative Singlestad?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if this is to Mayor Brady or the other testifiers. Is it Mr. Jones?
That's correct.
Okay. I'm looking at your handout here. Thanks for the detailed information. Total project cost $70 million. So basically, your group would do the 35, half of it, and then the other 35 from the state. And so of the 35, in this bill, you're asking for 5.5, and then the remainder, is it for next year?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
They indicated yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You've got to
get that on the tape. Sorry.
For the record.
Yes.
Okay. So then my question is, do you have any kind of estimates as far as some of the soft dollar, some of the revenue potential, or it's probably things that are not measurable for benefits to your area and the state as far as, you know, if people come here for a convention, are they more likely to locate a business here, which may become an employer? What kind of opportunities like that are we missing out on right now? But what might bring that in if you had this site available?
Mayor or Mr. Jones?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. We do see that, namely in our a big effort of the clinic and other spin-off businesses are attracting quality human beings to work at those facilities. And many times we find that their first interaction with our city, and a lot of times the state of Minnesota, is through the Mayo Civic Center and a convention that they're attending. Many times they come in and they get tours of our businesses and our business center, and then either offers are made or they have a preconceived notion about where they would be working. So as to specifically how many people, it's difficult to say, but it is tangible. We know that the human resources departments is very important to them. And I think it's important to note that since we've been planning for this expansion, those facilities and Mayo Clinic and all these folks have been in on the ground level of that, so it is very important to them on many levels, and that's an interesting point that you bring up. Also, it's really a regional hub of activity for a pretty good distance as far as entertainment, sporting events, and activities. It's really when we have an event for the region, it's kind of the home of the Super Bowl for basketball teams and that type of thing. So we see a lot of induced spending along with that. They may see a car dealership or a furniture store that they come shop later as a result of moving them to an event or an activity.
I'm sorry. Did you have further?
Well, I think.
Representative Liebling. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that question, Representative Singlestad, because I think you raise a very important issue there. When we had the bio business folks in the Capitol the other day, I went around and asked the people, you know, what keeps your company in Minnesota? And what I heard was, you know, we have a talent pool here, and there's a cluster around the medical products industry. And I think that, you know, it's really hard to quantify these things, but when people come and they meet other people who are working in their area and they get excited about the potential of being in a certain place, I think that that can't help but attract people and can't help but, there's a yeast effect there. And so, you know, it would be nice if we could figure out a way to quantify that, but I have no doubt that that occurs and that it would occur more if we had a project like this.
Does the mayor have something?
Mayor?
Madam Chair and Representative, just to piggyback on that, she mentioned the bio business, bio agriculture, biomedical, all of that. This will be my fourth year of going this year now to Boston for the bio 2007. Mm-hmm. That deed goes in the state of Minnesota, and of course we're always there looking for businesses to expand in Minnesota and to or to relocate or to locate a new one. So that is certainly one part of this, and this facility, of course, would facilitate that. The other, which is somewhat maybe a far, we have a quite new Rochester Art Center that's attached to this building, you know, Civic Center. We just created a partnership with Cheong City, Korea, which is a suburb of Seoul, last fall. And the first major event was going on now, was an art exhibit from Korea, 60 pieces of art that we opened on Saturday night. We had 7 of the artists come over from Korea, 3 of their elected officials. And this exhibit, and I would invite you all to come down to Rochester to see it. It is absolutely spectacular art that's going to be there till the end of April. Now, that has generated people coming from the Korean Council in Chicago and elsewhere, all coming to the community. And, of course, they always spend money, whether it's on gasoline in the cars or airplanes, whatever. So it's a broad-based area that's right downtown that can facilitate a lot of things, and certainly, as you saw from the report that the Convention and Visitors Bureau put together, we can expand that, and not only, and I want to emphasize that, not only for Rochester, but the number of them that would go outstate or are going outstate, we can get back into Minnesota. Thank you.
Representative Singleton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just real quick comment. I appreciate that. I have a background in events planning, and I know one of the things that I often heard was most people kind of have an indication that Minnesota is this cold state year-round, and it's kind of like if you can get them to our state and they can see that we're not iceberg here year-round, that they're more open to moving here. And, Madam Chair, as I hear things in other committees about a future shortage of workers in our state and kind of wanting to promote our state as sort of the brain power state or a state that kind of works on futuristic things, I think this would be something that would draw people in so they'd see what Minnesota's like, and like Representative Liebling said, with a kind of cluster approach to bring more of those people to our state as we look at a future work shortage here in our state. Thank you.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for this historical background.
And we have one edit. We took out the vetoed ones, but I am told that the Hermantown Indoor Sports and Phys Ed Center never happened. The money may have arrived there, but it never, the project never happened. So you might delete that from your list.
But that might be that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I noticed that Rochester is not on the list of having received funding in the past for these kind of facilities, and I'm aware of the fact that Rochester funded your current facility, if I'm not mistaken, 100% or most of it through the sales tax, and also is combined with a flood control project. You've indicated on this flyer that your total project cost is $70 million, and you're looking to raise $35 million locally. And can you give us how you intend to raise the rest of this?
Mr. Jones.
And what the sources would be?
Mr. Jones.
Madam Chair, Representative, thanks for asking that. We believe strongly that the hospitality industry is going to step forward to help match that. We're looking at a food and beverage tax, which Rochester currently does not have a food and beverage tax. That would be the bulk of where this would come from. Any additional would come from our rooms tax that we collect on hotel rooms. So that's where we're looking at raising the $35 million. I would say that I think on the list and speaking historically, this facility has received $2.5 million from the state in its over 90-year history. Facility was donated by the Mail Brothers, and we've fully funded the facility with exception of the $2.5 million.
In 1998, members, when that seemed to be the year, Mayo Civic Center is listed there as well. Representative Lanning, follow-up?
Oh, yes. Thank you for correcting me on that. I missed that in looking at this. Will you be asking the state for special taxing power then, as well as this bonding request?
Is that the mayor or Mr. Jones?
I believe we'll have to, as the way.
Mayor.
Excuse me. I believe we'd have to, as if the laws now stand.
Okay. Any further questions? Representative Murphy, did you have a?
Oh, I was just going to say that I hope that they're planning for more bathrooms for women in the convention center.
Thank you for that good advice.
Sure, if I could just real quickly add to
Representative Liebling, as you see, this committee would be particularly friendly to that good advice.
Well, so would my wife.
Well, Madam Chair, our legislative delegation from Rochester would be also. And another issue that I want to just mention is that Rochester has been very astute when it comes to thinking about energy issues. And that also is something that I think that, you know, personally I am very interested in, that when we're doing these kinds of buildings that we think about energy and how to really be efficient when we're upgrading and expanding, so that we're thinking about the long term. Yes. So bathrooms and other issues as well. Representative Murphy.
I'm glad.
Any further questions of the testifier? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
We're just checking, members, whether my... No, we're waiting for one person yet. Representative Murphy, I think yours is a quick bill. Is that right?
Should be.
Representative Murphy moves House File 1175.
Yep. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House File 1175 is a bill that would help pave the way to finding a new tenant for the aircraft maintenance facility in Duluth, because Northwest Airlines is rejecting their building lease with the state and city. When the state and local governments put up the money to develop the aircraft maintenance facility, there were certain conditions placed on the lease by a specific provision in the state law. This legislation would remove some of the statutory provisions so that we have greater flexibility in finding prospective new tenants for the building. Northwest has came in, or the agreement was made in 1991, but as of August 2005, the facility was vacated. And Northwest has no longer has any interest. in having any business or taking place at the base. And so we would like to go out and find a new tenant and have some more taxpayers working in northeastern Minnesota. Peter Sausen is here to tell you the details if you have questions.
Mr. Sausen, do you have testimony or just responding to questions?
Madam Chair, I'll respond to questions.
Okay. Questions of the author or Mr. Sausen? So we're looking for language and not money.
That's correct.
Any, Representative Lanning?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Sausen, could you speculate as to how helpful this will be in securing another tenant, and if we didn't do this, how problematic that would be?
Madam Chair and Representative Lanning, this would be very helpful, very, very helpful for the City of Duluth. The Duluth Economic Development Authority owns the building. They currently have a lease with Northwest Airlines, and in the bankruptcy process, Northwest has not yet rejected the lease. They either have to reject the lease or affirm the lease. Everyone believes that they will reject the lease, and when they reject the lease will be terminated. The Minnesota Statute 116R, which is amended by House File 1175, has provisions in it that require the company that leases the facility to have their headquarters in Minnesota. Well, a new tenant may be a company that's headquartered out of state and will have a branch here in Minnesota. To require them to have their headquarters here may be fatal in getting a company here. There's other provisions related to that were there for Northwest Airlines related to noise from scheduled airlines. There's a good probability that a new tenant would not be an airline company, unlikely to be an airline company, so having language in related to noise in an airline company isn't helpful. There's employment covenants that are required, and that may take some of the flexibility away from the City of Duluth in leasing the facility. So, and there's other positive language. There's in two places the word lease is added so that it's clear that the facility can be leased to a new tenant. So this is important language for the City of Duluth in order to find it, when they find a new tenant, to be able to enter into a lease with a new tenant.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So in short, this will help protect Minnesota's investment in this facility.
Madam Chair, Representative Lanning is absolutely correct.
Thank you.
Representative Tinglestad has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Murphy, I'm looking at the House Research Bill summary that talks about the repealer on page 11, section 17. And I'm just wondering if you could give us any additional information on the repealer, and is there some of that that perhaps should not be repealed because it would then give us more flexibility with a new tenant, or maybe Mr. Salson can give a comment as well.
Representative Tinglestad, we think this should all be repealed. The first repealer, 116R.02, subdivision 3, relating to data practices, when this was going through the legislature in 1991, Northwest Airlines is a privately held company, was very concerned about their information becoming public, and the data practices requirement here kept their financial information private except for those making the deal could have that information. So that it's really, there's no reason to have that in anymore. 116R.02 subdivision 6 relates to the engine repair facility that was never built, a transaction that was never entered into. There's no reason to have that. 116R.07 subdivision 7 relates to noise abatement requirements that were made of Northwest prior to entering into the agreements. They met those requirements, but there's no reason to have them now. 116R.04 subdivision 9 relates to reports that were required of the Commissioner of Deed and the Commissioner of Finance prior to entering into the transaction. We just don't think those reports serve any purpose now. And 116R.16 is the corporate headquarters requirement, which could be a terrible requirement for a new tenant. So we think they're all necessary.
Thank you.
If there are no further questions, thank you very much, Representative
Murphy.
Thank you. Representative Slocum. We have a question. Deb Dyson has. We're just holding it. Yeah.
Yeah, all bills today are being laid over for possible consideration. So, members, this is, again, a little bit out of order. Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move House File 372 be heard and laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Representative Slocum, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I want to really thank you for hearing this bill. I think it's a good one. It benefits my community greatly, so probably everyone who's presenting today thinks their bills are great. Anyway, in 1998, the state legislature decided to expand the Twin Cities International Airport at its current location. The community we're talking about here is Richfield. Richfield was directly impacted by that decision. Now, we recognize the benefits of the airport to the region and state, and we certainly respect that decision. However, it did put my community in some disarray, let me say. We had housing where right along the new north-south runway location, and as a result, the noise with the new runway becoming operational has been a new kind of noise, a low-frequency noise, which is like a rumble that makes everything shake. What we've done is we have cleared the housing, and there were apartment buildings and single-family homes in the area, and we have a new development where the bricks and mortar are literally going up as we speak. We seek to replace frontage road that was lost by the interchange at 66th Street and Cedar Avenue, or Highway 77, that runs out to Apple Valley and through Burnsville. This road is part of the airport noise mitigation plan in response to the new runway. It's a wonderful bang for the buck, if you will, because it links Richfield with Minneapolis, with Bloomington, and with Eagan. So it's kind of adjoining communities benefit also from this. This parkway has bike corridors and pedestrian pathways and is also sensitive and promotes transit service. The city of Richfield is putting in $4.7 million to fund this project also. I think it's a really good project, and we need it, and we need it as soon as possible, because, as I said, the brick and mortar is being built right now, the actual project. And I would like my testifiers to introduce themselves to you and to explain the project briefly.
Thank you. Chair Hausman, members of the committee, I'm Steve Devitz, Richfield City Manager. I will be very brief and simply do a very quick summary. As Representative Slocum said, the City of Richfield is responding to the loss of frontage road to Richfield and the construction and operation of a new runway, which in some areas was 1,200 feet from homes in Richfield. The first phase we were working on is right in the blue. It's the new shopping area that Representative Slocum was talking about. We've got about $4.7 million we're investing in this intersection, and the area that we're talking about is on the western edge of this project, which will separate this commercial area from new replacement housing, and it's the area in blue. It's on also on the back side of the handout that we have, and that would be the Richfield Parkway, the connectivity between the two areas. I'm going to ask Richfield Public Works Director Mike Eastling to take over and talk a little bit about the specifics of it.
Mr. Eastling, welcome to the committee.
Well,
and if you can speak into the microphone, we do tape.
Sure. And again, I'm just going through the handout.
And
to
please,
each one
for
of
the record, have. Just identify yourself.
Sure. Again, Madam Chair, Mike Eastling, Director of Public Works with the City of Richfield. Again, to restate, it replaces that frontage road that is lost there that's shown in green on the plan there next to Cedar Avenue. It is part of the airport noise mitigation plan, and I'm going to show how it actually buffers the commercial from the residential, and I think that's a key point on this, and I'm going to point that out here. Maybe the city manager can do that, how the actual Richfield Parkway right through here formally, and you'll see on your graphic that you've got there, that underneath there, you can see the shadow of the houses that were there prior to the development. And there needs to be a separation between the commercial development that's shown in blue there and then the single-family residential homes to the left or to the west on the graphic there. It's a critical link for the Cedar Avenue bike corridor. In a few moments, the city of Bloomington, I believe, is going to present a plan for the Cedar Avenue Bridge and how that's going to be. That Cedar Avenue bike corridor connection would run through Richfield along this corridor, and we're planning to accommodate that connection from the Chain of Lakes down to that bridge project. Promotes future transit service between Minneapolis and Mall of America and Point South. It is on the BRT, the Bus Rapid Transit Line on Trunk Highway 77, and this is one of the stops on that route. And finally, Richfield has contributed some $4.74 million to date just in the roundabout that actually that shows up in the light green on there that's been built to date, and we really need to complete so that we've got a connection north-south that was disconnected with the frontage road that was in place prior to that. And with that, I believe we're prepared to stand for questions.
They are Representative Carlson?
My recollection on the north end of that strip there was a series of apartment buildings. What happens if they are still there to the residents? Is there a relocation plan or?
To the chair and the representative, your question. The apartment buildings that were, and they would have been in the area indicated in the blue, those were all acquired. And people relocated. Those were demolished, and the commercial facilities that we're putting in are sitting on top of that. There was also some 42 single-family residences that were also taken out. Those were the most closely affected by the new runway, the low-frequency noise.
Representative Carlson. Any further questions? If not, thank you, Representative Slocum, for bringing the bill before you.
I would just like to end our presentation, and I know you're in a hurry, saying how important it is for this year's funding that we get this money, if at all possible. And I know money is very tight, and every project is important, but we are literally constructing and could really use it this year. So I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
We now have before us House File 859, and I'm assuming that Chair Hausman will be moving her own bill.
Yes, Madam Chair. I will move House File 859.
Go ahead, state your name for the record, and go ahead, please.
And members, I think you have, do we have a handout in your packet about the St. Paul River Center campus? Is that what you did? Collectively, the River Center, the legendary Roy Wilkins Auditorium, the XL Energy Center, the Ordway Center for the Performing Arts, they make up an integrated campus that is unique in Minnesota and in the United States. I believe it probably is one of the reasons why we're going to have an unusual convention coming here, because of the opportunities afforded with so many facilities together on a single campus. The diversity of venues on that one campus sets the River Center apart. In 2006, just to give you a sense of the impact, the St. Paul River Center, excluding the XL Energy Center, generated more than $42 million in spending by hosting 317 events. I'd like to just give you a little bit of a flavor of past history.
Representative Hausman, do you want to move your delete all amendment first?
I will move House File DE1.
Thank you.
And we want to act on it.
And any questions about that? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When early in my career here, there was a civic center. It was then called the St. Paul Civic Center. It was kind of a 1950s style building that had lots of small rooms and spaces. And as we toured that, we realized we were in danger of no longer competing for national conventions because of the facility. And you worry about a big black hole in the center of your city. And our city went through a huge amount of study. And before we agreed to raise a half-cent sales tax, we made that center prove, not once, but several times, that if we raised a tax for that center, that in fact the economic payoff would be there. They had to, as I said, do more than one study to prove to us that the economic payoff was going to actually happen. And we certainly have seen that happen. Unlike other convention facilities in Minnesota and across the country, the River Center was built without any capital investment from the state of Minnesota. Under a financing structure devised in the early 1990s, debt service on the River Center Convention, the River Center Convention Center, is paid to a significant degree out of operating revenue. And as a result, this convention center is unable to offer the financial incentives that other facilities offer to attract those regional and national conventions. In fact, we look ahead just 30 months and feel that the revenues from the convention center operation will be insufficient to fully pay debt service, operating costs, maintenance, and capital improvements. I have a few testifiers. As they may have heard, we're being very brief today, and I believe, are we going to start with the mayor?
Okay.
Yes, go ahead. State your name for the record, and please state your testimony.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Chris Coleman, Mayor of the City of St. Paul. Representative Houseman has done a good job outlining the history of this facility and the importance of it. So I won't repeat that other than to say that it's not just the fact that we have a national convention of incredible significance coming to the City of St. Paul in 2008. We were able to attract it because of the uniqueness of the facility. It's unlike any other facility in the country. When they went to other venues across the country and came here and saw what we had, both the Democrats and Republicans wanted to come to this site because it provides a great opportunity for them. We also have, at the beginning of January, 25,000 people coming for the Pheasants Forever, which was an organization that was started in the state of Minnesota, actually in St. Paul, has become now a nationwide organization with 700 chapters. 25,000 people plus will be coming to the River Center. Because of the synergy that's created by these various assets, because of the its unique location, we are able to do this, but we won't be able to continue to do that with the debt load that we have. We won't be able to promote the facility. We won't be able to upgrade the facility in any fashion unless we have significant relief from the debt that is really crushing the facility. One of the things that we have talked about with other cities that have hosted a national convention, like the one we're hosting in 2008, they have said that the best thing about it is that it puts you in a position to host almost anything else that could possibly be considered for that facility. So in order to take advantage of that, we do have to be able to market ourselves. We do have to be able to upgrade the facility. We do have to make sure that the integration of the campus is complete. While some of the parts of the campus are new, the Roy Wilkins Auditorium was built in 1932. It's a 5,000-seat facility. It's a beautiful historic asset, but it's really kind of needs a major, major renovation in order to be able to continue to add to the asset. We just spoke with Scott Ledoux was over testifying before our Senate committee earlier this morning talking about trying to get boxing matches, and ESPN would be coming in and covering these events if that facility is continuing to attract things like that. So we believe it's a great asset, an asset that adds to the entire region, an asset that is a great showcase for the City of St. Paul and an economic driver. But at this point, given the current load and the current structure, it would be very difficult to maintain that into the future.
And thank you so much for your testimony. Are there any questions?
We have one additional.
Okay. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the tape, and go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Seamus O'Mara. I am a River Center board member and is past co-chair. Mayor Coleman and Representative Houseman are correct. We have a unique integrated campus between the River Center, the XL Energy Center, the Yordway. We have close proximity to Rice Park and the Science Museum. If you've been down there to an event, I think you know what I mean. We host a number of diversified events through the River Center that we're very proud of. The Hmong New Year, the U.S. Figure Skating Championship, the U.S. Gymnastics Championships. The mayor mentioned boxing, and there's a great history of boxing at Roy Wilkins Auditorium. It is our ability to deliver these unique, diversified events that we believe, that I believe, is the reason that we're here. We need a long-term financial platform to help stabilize our marketing efforts, to help us invest and reinvest in capital improvements, to take care of our parking ramp facility where we derive most of our revenue. It's those types of things, Madam Chair, that are critical to St. Paul, to Ramsey County, to the Twin Cities in the state of Minnesota, because we believe we have a pretty unique asset and all Minnesotans can benefit from it. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Do you have another testifier, Madam Representative?
If you have questions about numbers.
Okay, great.
Our number person.
Okay, we have a question from Representative Tinglestad.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I think maybe this is to Mayor Coleman. Thank you for your testimony. This sounds like an interesting project. I'm just wondering, though, as we look at sort of geographical balance around the state and we try to put together the bonding bill over the next couple days here, you know, we're going to be here. We've already heard from Central Corridor and about the Union Depot. Can you kind of tell me, priority-wise, what is the city of St. Paul looking at? I mean, obviously the whole bill can't be St. Paul stuff, but where does this fall in relationship to those projects?
Are you sure?
Well, I guess the chair needs to decide that, yeah.
Yes, to that point, by Representative Mahoney.
Union Depot is not a St. Paul project. Okay. That's a Ramsey County project, okay. And it's a transit project that has really, it's collaterally connected to St. Paul only because of its physical location. It's not something on our agenda.
Thank you for that clarification. Mayor Coleman.
Madam Chair, Representative Mahoney is correct. The support item, the City of St. Paul is in support of the Central Corridor. It certainly is an important project for our city. It's also a project that deeply impacts Hennepin County and the City of Minneapolis, connects to the Hiawatha Corridor and the other transit lines. The Union Depot would be a multimodal transit hub that would serve the entire East Metro area. That is why we have begun to look at the Eastern Transportation Alliance to really start looking at various corridors that would come into it. So we don't we view that as again a regional project that we are in support of. The River Center and the debt relief for the River Center is a specific ask to the City of St. Paul.
Thank you. And Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Mayor. Will you clarify for me again what you said about the Roy Wilkins Auditorium? Are you planning on having that completed then, that renovation completed before the convention?
No, that actually would not be completed prior to the convention. There are certain things that we would be able to do. This is a bill that we would be coming up to the legislature on regardless of the national convention. I think what I meant to say in my previous remarks is that in order to take advantage of the stage that we set when the convention comes, we have to continue to be able to provide a first-class facility. We have to be able to market that facility. And if we don't, some of the, you know, the convention's a wonderful opportunity, but it's not without its headaches. And part of the reason why you go through these things is because it's a great way to promote your entire region. And we believe that to continue to be able to do that, the upgrades to the center, and maybe Mr. O'Meara can speak if there's specific things that might be completed by then, but this is not intended to be done for the Republican National Convention. It's really to take advantage of the fact that that is coming to the City of St. Paul.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Mr. Mayor, and then the Scott LeDoux part, is the box, if you do the boxing thing, is that going to be in the auditorium, in the Roy Wilkins Auditorium?
Mayor Coleman.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, the boxing matches have been held at the Roy Wilkins Auditorium. Again, it's a 5,000-seat facility, but it is a facility that doesn't integrate particularly well into the other parts of the convention center. It's difficult to host shows there. Boat shows and various things make it very difficult to get in and out of. The kind of logistics of staging an event where there's national TV would be significantly improved with some upgrades to the facility and in a more integrated approach to the campus. So we believe that it would, in the long term, we'll be able to host a lot more of these events. Those type of events like a boxing match or concerts or Mr. O'Meara referenced the Hmong New Year and some other, we have the the figure skating championship coming. We had the gymnastics just last summer. So there are all kinds of events that we think that we would be in a better position to host that we're competing against convention centers and auditoriums across the country if we are able to do some of these upgrades.
Again, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, and Madam Chair. And then, Mr. Mayor, you're going to still have the Roy Wilkins Auditorium, though, and
yes.
And that's going to do the regular auditorium stuff as you get your layout expanded or diversified so you can have these other things. You're still going to have the auditorium,
yes.
Though.
Absolutely.
Okay. Mayor Coleman.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Representative Peterson has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make sure I had my numbers right. We're defeasing bonds, forgiving bonds, $4.9 million. You're going to pay back $5.2 million, and then we're going to forgive another $6.3 million on the parking ramp, so it nets out to about $51 million.
Madam Chair.
Would you state your name for the record?
Madam Chair, my name is Matt Smith. I'm the finance director for the City of St. Paul. The three components in the bill would be forgiveness of the remaining balance of the state loan, and the second would be $48.5 million,
mm-hmm.
I believe is a corrected number, to provide funds so that the debt on the convention center can be paid off, and then $6.3 million goes to retire the debt on the convention center ramp.
Yeah.
All those things happen, the net relief available to support the kinds of activities that Mayor and Seamus talked about would be $6.9 million benefit to the city.
Follow up, Mr. Peterson?
The net effect was what number?
It would be $6.9 million annually.
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 For 20...
Representative Peterson.
Mr. Smith? He does.
Representative Peterson, the arena loan, which will be forgiven, is scheduled to run through 2020.
Right.
The River Center bonds have payments now extending through 2023. The parking ramp bonds are scheduled to be paid now through 2014. So the net relief figure would be roughly $6.9 million a year. And increasing with the schedule of the arena loan and parking ramp payments up until 2014, and when the parking ramp is debt is scheduled to be retired, and then it would continue through 2023 when only the River Center bonds would be outstanding.
Mr. Peterson, Representative Peterson.
I think I'm tracking, but that's the forgiveness. But the way the bill reads, it's $49,500,000 for defeasing the existing $48 million debt, another $6.3 million to forgive the River City parking ramp, and then you will pay back $5 million over the next 5 years.
Oh.
So I just took those three numbers at face value and came up with a net of $50 million, and what you're talking about, I think, is the annual forgiveness going out of $6
million.
So I'm...
Madam Chair, let me try it again. There's two components of cash. There are payments from the state that would be need to be provided to provide this ongoing relief for the River Center campus debt. And that would be the $48.5 million, which is enough to completely take care of the debt on the convention center, and the $6.3 million, which is enough to completely take care of the debt on the parking ramp. The $5 million figure you see is the amount that the city has paid back to date on the state arena loan, and the balance of that would be forgiven going forward.
So those bonds are going to continue to be paid, and the state will be contributing the $6 million for the next 20 years to make those payments for the city of St. Paul.
Mr. Smith,
is that another street way to talk about it?
Mr. Smith.
Mr. Chair, Representative Peterson. The state contribution will be used to retire the bonds as quickly as we can under the provisions of those bonds. And then the annual benefit to the River Center campus will be
will have be able to use those sales tax dollars primarily and parking revenues for other needs on the campus.
Right. Okay, I'm just trying to get my arms around what it is we're planning to do. Okay.
Representative Mahoney has a question.
I got so confused with numbers, Mr. Representative Peterson, that I almost forgot mine. Mr. Mayor or Mr. Coleman or someone at the table, can you kind of, just so I'm clear, on what's the seating capacity of the arenas and facilities that we are looking for debt forgiveness?
Well, again, the entire campus, the Roy Wilkins Auditorium is a 5,000-seat facility, approximately. The XL Energy Center is approximately an 18,000-plus-seat facility. You have the various convention space that exists at the River Center, and that hosts all, I wouldn't put it in terms of seating capacity for that facility, because you're really talking about exhibition space and very standing and very walking around till your legs tire out, and then you find a place to sit. But I don't know what the footprint is for the convention space.
Mr. O'Meara,
Representative Mahoney, I think it's about 70,000 contiguous square feet of exhibit space, and Wilkins might be another 25 or 30, but it's not contiguous. If I took you on a tour down. Downstairs, it has pillars, and it's an elevator.
I've been there. I know the tour, the pillars.
So that's one of the reasons.
Kind of like the same ones they got over at the Ford building.
That's Mr. O'Meara.
Got to bring that one into it.
No, that, you've answered my question. I was actually kind of trying to figure out concert venue, and one is 18,000, one is 5,000. Thank you.
But Representative Mahoney, Madam Chair, if I could just, one of the things that kind of exemplifies the unique asset that we have there is last week when we hosted the state high school hockey tournament, there was also a hockey expo. And so not only were the people that were going to the game participating in actually seeing the game, and people were coming from around the region, not just the state of Minnesota, to participate in that, but then there were thousands and thousands of kids that were going next door to the hockey expo, and to the point of walking around till your legs tire out. I did that myself, and so that is why this is such a unique asset, and why we were able to attract a convention of the significance of the Republican National Convention.
And who won?
That particular game, Hermantown.
Didn't they win all the games?
All I know is that Creighton got beat out before we could even get there. So,
Representative Hansen has a question.
Madam Chair and Mayor Coleman, just so I understand this, the debt relief and forgiveness helps attract visitors and business to the Civic Center. And is there an economic benefit to surrounding communities for that? For example, maybe South St. Paul, West St. Paul, Mendota Heights, et cetera.
Mayor Coleman.
Madam Chair, Representative Hansen, clearly, if you look at the anticipated benefits of the community as a result of the National Convention in September of 2008, you're talking about $150 million, at least that was estimated in New York and Boston in 2004. The fact of the matter is St. Paul has a limited number of hotel rooms. Those visitors that will be here for five or six nights, potentially longer, will be spread out across the entire region, downtown Minneapolis, Bloomington, up in Anoka, out in South St. Paul. Any available space, any restaurant space, any exhibition space, when you have an event of that magnitude, that is clearly a regional draw. I mean, we believe that there will be people staying in Rochester and St. Cloud for those events. So this is really significant, and it does have a regional and a statewide benefit.
Thank you. Representative Leader has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, and I don't know who to direct this to, but as I understand it, you're retiring these bonds. Is there any savings and prepayment reflected in this, or is this actually that would be your total outlay?
Mr. Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative Leader, my understanding of the number that we worked with the authors to come up with is the minimal state contribution needed to retire the bond. So I I'm not aware of any benefit coming back to the city aside from this. We understand the resource limitations that you're working under, and so we want to come up with the minimum necessary to retire the debt net, and then allow the proceeds to be used, as we talked about, for other purposes. So I'm not aware of any other resources.
Representative Peterson has another question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Mayor, I heard you mention Bloomington, so I thought I would throw in one of the big debates we're going to have is the Mall of America expansion 2 and wanting the state to participate significantly. Do you perceive that expansion would help your prophecy by generating more sales tax and state income that would be beneficial to this facility?
Mayor Coleman.
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, I couldn't really speak to the impact of that. We are engaged in regional discussions to kind of look at the assets and the facilities around the region to figure out how we can best coordinate that so that we are creating opportunity instead of creating competition.
Representative Peterson.
Do I sense that St. Paul might have a negative approach to support of the mall expansion?
Mayor Coleman.
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, we have not engaged in that discussion specifically to that. We just are engaging in a broader discussion of how we can help coordinate resources.
Any further questions for any of the testifiers or for Representative Hausman? If not, Representative Hausman, do you have some concluding remarks?
I have no concluding remarks. I would simply suggest, Madam Chair, that since Representative Mahoney is in the room now, that we might call the BCA people forward because we were sort of waiting for him to be here so that they could answer the questions. Thank you, members, for your patience.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Which one is that? Okay. So the next bill that we'll be looking at will be House File Number 132. Is that correct?
No.
I think it's just the Department of Public Safety.
Sorry about that. It's a forensic laboratory update.
The top of the list.
Representative Mahoney.
No, it's not a bill.
It's not a bill. It's I just have some questions for them. Because in committee the other night we had a request from some of the northern counties looking for another criminal lab. And I think it was actually Representative Tingleston. So, and I had some questions for the BCA and public safety.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for coming. Thank you for waiting. I had to keep an appointment with a city of St. Paul official. So I appreciate that.
Thank you, Representative Mahoney. Representative Tingleston, did you have some beginning remarks?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just for the record, it relates to House File 1308 and House File 1263. Representative Abler had a clone of that bill, and I know that there were several questions that night, and so we wanted to get some things on record.
Yeah.
And related to some of the handouts members have, at the beginning of the meeting, you received three different newspaper articles. We thought this was going to be the first thing up today, so if you want to pull that out from your pile of papers there, but relates to some of the issues that we'd like to get on record here with some questions, and I think maybe, I don't know if they want to present or Representative Mahoney just wants to ask questions and others.
Are the testifiers, first of all, welcome to the committee. Are you aware of the questions that we have, or are you here for questions in case we have some of you?
Probably here for questions.
First state your name and...
I'm sorry, my name is Tim O'Malley. I'm the superintendent of the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. I think in the interest of efficiency, I know you're moving quickly today. I'd be happy to answer any questions about the facility.
Very good. And would your next testifier there also give us your name for the record, please?
Yes, Madam Chair. My name is Frank Dolish. I'm the laboratory director at the BCA.
Thank you. And now questions from the committee. Representative Mahoney.
The other night, and some of the nights are starting to blend together, so I can't tell which night it was anymore. We had a request for, I think it was a $6 million contribution or state contribution to another criminal investigation lab or forensic lab up in the northern counties. And the BCA is actually in my district, and you're great neighbors. We'd love to have you there. But I'm wondering, as the director, is a third lab, because we now have one up in Bemidji, and I think they have 10 or 12 or 15 scientists there. What do we need? I mean, do you have enough scientists, or is your backlog at that level? Do you have extra space? Can you tell us kind of what's going on at the BCA that's creating this kind of a backlog?
Mr. O'Malley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Mahoney. Where to begin? I've met with Sheriff Anderson up in Anoka County. I know him well. We worked together on the street years ago. We've talked about his vision for a facility up there, a new law enforcement center, including a laboratory. So we have communicated well on this. Directly to answer some of your questions about the BCA facility now, we do need more scientists. In the governor's budget, there is funding for 20 additional scientists over the biennium, 10 each year. It's about $1 million the first year and 1.8 at the second year. That would go a long ways towards helping with the turnaround time. There really isn't a simple answer to turnaround time. It seems like there almost should be, but there are a lot of factors that come into play on that. One clearly is the amount of bench time that a scientist spends on doing the work. We do have room between the BCA facility at headquarters here in St. Paul and the facility up in Bemidji to add between 40 and 50 more scientists without having to change any of those sunken costs. The space, the building, the equipment, those types of things. Our building here in St. Paul was built with the idea of expansion 3-4 years ago. We have now filled investigations, CRIMNET, CGIS, our training area, those are filled in. The laboratory still has room to expand in terms of personnel without having to add to the building itself. So we do have that, those sunken costs are there, and we do have room for more scientists. Some of the factors, if you want me to go into a little bit on turnaround time, or is that direct enough for what you need to know?
Well,
if you could be quick about some of the comments about the turnaround time, that'd be just fine, because we are at some level pressed for time.
Certainly.
Superintendent O'Malley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Mahoney. There are, as I said, bench time, the time they actually spend working on the evidence, whatever it might be, whether it's in toxicology or trace or DNA or mitochondrial DNA or whatever the discipline is. We also have scientists that engage in other activities. They're on the crime scene team, for example. So every time there's a crime scene, some of the scientists go out and work that on the street, so the number of crime scenes might affect it. There's training. There's some of those types of activities that are fairly predictable. There's also a couple of real timely court opinions right now that are out there. There is a decision based on Fifth Amendment right to confront your witnesses, in which there's a statute, Minnesota statute, that was declared unconstitutional in saying that laboratory analyst reports could not go into evidence without the analyst being there to testify about them. It used to be under the statute that with 10 days notice, if the defendant didn't explicitly say they needed the witness there, that was a waiver. They've said that's unconstitutional. There is a new bill out that I think could straighten that out, and that would help us, because right now, every time a report has to go in, defense attorneys are subpoenaing the scientists, and they're driving to Worthington or Roseau or wherever it might be, and 99 out of 100 times when they get there and defense sees that they're there, they don't call them then, and the report gets in, and it's a lot of travel time. The other thing is there's a number of technological advances that are taking place, both pure communication and then also forensically, that are going to affect turnaround time over the next several years. One is, and this is another one related to testifying, we now can do teleconferencing, and we're piloting that in a couple of districts, where both the defense and the prosecution say, especially for the idea of just getting the report and evidence, all they really need to do is sit there, say their name, is that your report? Yes, it is. Is this the protocol you follow? Yes, and then the report speaks for itself. So for a scientist to walk down the hall to a conference room, spend 5 minutes and go back to work, rather than drive to Worthington, get a motel room, spend the night to do his or her five-minute testimony. So some of the communications, and then also just in forensic itself, the amount of robotics and some of the other changes that we've made in the lab, the pure advances in science. 20 years ago, nobody ever would have even mentioned DNA in a courtroom at all. 15 years ago, when we were doing the RFLP process, it took almost 3 months to do a single analysis. Now analysis takes 5, 6 days, depending on the quality and the size of the blood or whatever it might be. So advances just keep continuing. And are we going to get to a point when somebody's going to take a cup and spit the gum in there and shake it and there's the DNA in 5 minutes? I don't know. It's hard to say. So all those things we're trying to anticipate. We're engaged in some research with a number of universities and other labs around the country in developing this kind of advances in science. So all those factors are going to go into play in terms of turnaround time. And then business practices. We're doing some things differently with our clients, with sheriffs and police departments. We have a pilot project right now in Stearns County in which drug testing takes, we have a large amount of drug testing goes on in the state. We're doing one now where we are doing an abbreviated test, a shortened test, and reporting those results to the prosecutor in Stearns County. They are then using those results for the omnibus hearing with the defense bar's consent. And 99 out of 100 cases in the drug cases, once you get through the evidentiary hearing and it's admissible, that's the end of the case. If the drugs are in, you're going to be convicted usually. So they're doing that, and that has cut down like 80% of our caseload out of Stearns County. And then we're doing a test on that to make sure that the shortened test is accurate. And so those kinds of things are still coming into play.
Thank you so much.
Chair, one last question. So there are other avenues to pursue short of a full blown crime lab. And my bigger fear is that not just Anoka or the northern counties have one, but we start having a progression of $6 or $10 million every year for the next crime lab in Southwest, Southeast, Northeast, Northwest, Middle, you know, whichever. And I don't want to blame any particular county. So there are other avenues that could be pursued short of a full-blown crime lab or even in some of these outlying areas that need them.
Superintendent O'Malley?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I think there are, and I think very important in where we're at in this process, last legislative session, we created committee, the Forensic Laboratory Advisory Board, was created. It has 20 members in that range from all the disciplines, defense bar, prosecutors, police officers, chief association, sheriff association, governor has a representative, and they're discussing these exact issues. What is the future of forensic evidence in Minnesota, and how should we go about addressing this? There are other labs in the state. Minneapolis has a lab. St. Paul has a lab. Now, they do different disciplines. DNA, in my opinion, may not be as well suited for a smaller lab because of some of the major startup costs and because it's still an emerging science. Fingerprints, for example, might be more suited for that. Anoka County currently has a crime scene team, very, very competent crime scene team. So I think we are probably moving in the direction where there may be more labs around the state. And I think this Forensic Laboratory Advisory Board is a great vehicle to make sure that we have consistency in terms of protocol, training, certifications, that we really operate in a very cooperative and comprehensive way rather than in a competitive way.
Thank you. And in the interest of time, we have three more questions, so hopefully, no, Mr. Erdahl, your representative, no more?
In the interest of time, I'll withdraw my question.
Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, I'm feeling interested in how this coordinates with, I think it's tri-county agreement that they would close the lab. I also visited with Sheriff Anderson. And something that comes to mind, now they wanted $6 million for their facility, and then they indicated that they would cover the cost of operating the facility, the Joint Powers Agreement. If they police department somewhere in Minnesota is having you analyze evidence, do you build them back? I should have asked a follow-up of them in terms of how they were going to make that financially self-sustaining. Or is that operated strictly off the state appropriations?
Superintendent O'Malley?
Madam Chair, members, we don't charge for any of our services in the laboratory and investigations anywhere.
Representative Carlson.
To make that self-sustaining, I assume they're going to somehow do it off their local revenues in some way in those counties. The other question I had, these positions that are being requested for additional scientists, where are they typically trained educated staff? Do that in Minnesota, or do we have to recruit nationally? Where do these scientists and technicians?
Superintendent O'Malley?
Madam Chair, for the specifics on that, I'm going to defer to the director of our lab, if that's right.
Director Dolge.
Yes, Chair, Representative, we do start off with a basic degree, usually in biology, chemistry, biochemistry, and then we, on top of that, provide additional training for those individuals, and it depends on the discipline, how long that training might be. Typically, for something like drugs or DNA, it might take, depending on their prior experience, anywhere from 6 months to a year. In some disciplines, like firearms and latent fingerprints, it might take anywhere from a year to 2 years before they're fully trained. So we have an investment in training of these scientists. Occasionally, we do are successful in robbing somebody from another crime laboratory who is experienced, but that doesn't happen real frequently.
Representative Carlson.
Do your own additional training as opposed to providing or getting the training done.
Chair,
Director
Chair Representative, that's correct.
Thank you so much for that. Representative Murphy, do you still have a question?
We've answered.
You passed it. Very good. Representative
Tinkles. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have three quick things. First of all, to Representative Carlson's question about the operations, and I guess I didn't get a clear answer. So the BCA lab, are you using state dollars to run your operations on an annual basis?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes. Our state appropriation, our funding pays for everything we do at the BCA, including in the laboratory, so we don't charge local jurisdictions, sheriff's departments, police departments, anybody for the analysis we do, or for traveling out and testifying, expert testimony, whatever might be needed.
And Senator Tinkelstein.
And thank you for that. And so just to clarify then, with the testimony from the Anoka County Sheriff the other night, and to Representative Carlson's point, this regional group would be paying their own operations, so it would only be those local groups that would be paying for annual operations. There would be no state dollars in the actual operations on an annual basis. That's my understanding. We do have somebody here in the audience, but I think that's fairly clear. Okay, my second question, Madam Chair. I know Anoka County, they testified that right now they're only submitting about 10% of their evidence to the BCA because of the backlog. You know, some of it is 6 months, and they felt like if they, you know, did the full 100%, maybe it would be a two-year backlog, I don't know. But so assuming that you get these additional 20 scientists, could they increase the number of submissions by, let's say, 500 to 600%? Could you still handle the additional things that they would submit?
Superintendent O'Malley.
Madam Chair and Representative, yes, we could. We have not set any limit on agencies submitting evidence to the BCA. We accept all evidence. We will meet with the agencies to determine the time frame when it's needed. For example, in the everybody's familiar with the east side of St. Paul rapist situation that was going on. That obviously went to a high priority. It's a violent crime. It's an ongoing unknown suspect, and we turn that evidence around in 5, 6, 7 days. There are some cases where the evidence may take 6 months to analyze, and we try to factor in. For example, if someone's already in prison and they're in custody, we know where they're at, the statute of limitations isn't an issue, we would put that towards the back. Those are sort of the two extremes, and then everywhere in between.
Thank you. And then my last question, and I'll have a quick comment. My last question then, the 20 additional scientists, $1 million the first year, $1.8 million the second year, any kind of indications of if that funding's really going to come through, or what are you hearing at this point?
Superintendent O'Malley.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, it is, as I stated, it was in the is in the governor's budget bill, and my understanding the Senate budget bill just came out the other day, and that mirrors the governor's recommendation.
Representative Tinkle.
And thank you. And to that point, Madam Chair, we may want to watch how those allocations go. Just have a quick summary here, and then it looks like there may be somebody from the audience that wants to testify. But so, you know, the technology is really an important piece of this whole forensic laboratory
idea, and I think, you know, if you look at something like what typewriters used to be around in business, and now, and then people started getting computers, you didn't say to the people who had the typewriters, you have to only use typewriters now, we're not going to allow you to do computers. And so I think this is just sort of the future of what's coming, and certainly to the point that the regional facility would be paying their own operations and not using any state dollars to operate would maybe be more cost effective, and they would be dealing with their own issues of the backlog in their own area. So I appreciate the information. I think this is going to sort of be an ongoing discussion, but just to point out some of the differences. And Madam Chair, there may be somebody from the audience who wants to testify very quickly.
Please come forward. Please identify yourself for the record.
Captain Robert Aldrich. I'm from the Oak County Sheriff's Office. Okay. I'm the project manager on the Public Safety
Committee.
I too want to iterate that we have fully supported the BCA's request for additional scientists when we met with you. That's very much needed. And you look at that from the comments from in a couple of newspaper articles you saw, we were talking about a 62% increase in caseload and needing 20 scientists to do that. We're talking about, from our three counties, a 600% increase in evidence submissions. That's a lot of evidence. That goes from the 500 to 600 we submit now to closer to 6,000 pieces. I don't think 20 people is going to be able to handle that from Anoka, Sherburne, right across the state if everybody wants to submit everything they need to submit. Regionalization is the way the state has gone with ARMOR, the radio system. It's the way we've gone in public health with regional nodes and other law enforcement projects. Your Homeland Security has gone to regionalization. We think it's a needed process, particularly in this area. And I'll give you one case real quickly. A couple years ago, we had an elderly lady lived in an apartment in Minneapolis die. Her family went down, pulled out her belongings, and have a garage sale here at a grandma's property, opened a trunk and found the remains of a dead infant. Subsequent to that, we found two other dead infants in those trunks. Over a year before we could tell that family who those remains belonged to. And I just submit that's too long. It's not what people expect, and it's not what they're willing to accept. And the BCA needs more staff to do their work better, but there's also room for a partnership with a regionalized lab that can serve the needs of the immediate community at a much more direct level. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming. Representative Rood. I will move House File 961. Representative Rood, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I appreciate your patience. We do have some handouts that we'd like the page to pass out, if that's okay. House File 961 is a bill that would appropriate money for a regional veterans memorial to be built in Eden Prairie. And Madam Chair, I do have some very hardworking veterans with me today, but in the interest of time, we do have a DVD that they can show 3 minutes of, and we think that that's probably all you'll need to see.
Okay.
So if it's with the committee, that's okay.
And is this Mr. Mallow?
Yes, it is, Madam Chair.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much.
Do you need assistance with the video?
Please. I don't know.
Oh. I did one of the pages.
Jeremy's
here.
They've put together some wonderful materials. They've been working very hard on this project.
Madam Chair, the the DVD is 8 minutes, but we're going to show 3 minutes of it, just the first 3 minutes.
Okay. You got it? No, I just can't. When you're in charge, I can.
It'll break up what you've been, you know, carrying on.
We need a little color, yeah, in our life.
Yeah. Thank you.
And it looks like it's happening. Let's choose English.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Parlez-vous français?
We should go on first.
No. That's right. No. Yeah, all right.
The role is fine. I will put
him in this row. You can tell our committee hasn't had many of these. pages haven't been called upon often to. Do we have testimony instead?
Yes.
Mr. Mallow.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee for having time for our testimony. This memorial is a very unique memorial. This memorial has two focal structures, one representing sacrifice and dedication of veterans, and the other focus is dedication to world peace and the ultimate goal of veterans strive to achieve. The structures will be designed by a contest of artists and students throughout the country, a lot like the Vietnam War Memorial was done. I believe in having these two things together make this truly a unique memorial. This memorial will be a community memorial, not only serving Eden Prairie, but also serving the surrounding communities, Hopkins, Edina, Bloomington, Chanhazen, and Minnetonka. Why do we need state funding? Eden Prairie does not have a VFW nor an American Legion. We do not have a funding source. Who has given up to this point? It has come from veterans. It is sad commentary, but those who care about veterans are not those who have been served, but those who have served. What we are asking for is $200,000, half the estimated cost of the memorial. This is a lot of money, but I'd like to put that money in perspective. This is less money than a leg prosthesis and therapy costs for one soldier. The memorial is therapy for those who have served and will not cure all ills, but will act as a place of healing. I'd like to leave you with a quote from Major Michael Daniel O'Connell. If you're able, save for them a place inside you and save one backward glance when you're leaving for a place they can no longer go. Be not ashamed to say you love them, though they may or may not have all, maybe, I'm sorry, though you may or may not have always. Take what they have taught you from their dying and keep it to your own. And in the time when men decide and feel safe to call war insane, take one moment to embrace those gentle heroes we left behind. Thank you, Matt.
Remember those who have gave.
Do we still see the visual?
Well, the beginning is the visual.
Oh, the big beginning.
Of the memorial itself.
We continually tell the story that a lot of young people don't know.
Representative Rood.
Thank you. I would like to note that they have raised a significant amount of funds already. And maybe
Mr. Mallow, the fundraising?
We've raised about $80,000, and we've just started in September, so we feel we've done pretty good up to this point.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for your patience.
It's important.
The willingness with which our young people are likely to serve
and a little more volume,
no matter how justified, shall be directly proportional to how they perceive the veterans of earlier wars were treated.
Okay.
and appreciated by their nation. George Washington. The Veterans Memorial Committee is proud to present the Eden Prairie Veterans Memorial. This memorial is a testimonial of eternal gratitude to all those who have served, to those currently serving, and to those who have given their lives in service. The memorial will honor service and is dedicated to peace, liberty, freedom, and security. Our mission was to create and maintain in perpetuity a suitable memorial to honor and preserve the unselfish contributions to the security, peace, liberty, and freedom of our country by the men and women of our military service. Here are some residents of Eden Prairie and why they feel our community needs a veterans memorial.
Well, I think it's completely appropriate for a community like Eden Prairie that is very civic-minded to have the opportunity to recognize those veterans.
Madam Chair, that's all we probably need
and
to show.
And we don't mind seeing Representative Paulson either.
And Senator David Hammond's on it, too.
Thank you very much. Any concluding comments or any questions to the bill? Thank you very much for bringing
you.
These.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Hansen. Representative Hansen moves. Are we taking up 1536 first?
I think we can do 1536 pretty quick.
Representative Hansen moves 1536.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Meyer from the DNR is here to assist me with this. Previously, during the DNR overview of projects, we discussed invasive species and the famous Asian flying carp, and heard about the economic impact that and the ecological impact that the encroachment of these species can have. And so I think during that testimony, Mr. Meyer talked that the DNR has been spending the last few years talking about this and planning about it. But so I introduced House File 1536 to begin the process of building a barrier similar to what is along the Chicago River, preventing the fish from invading Lake Michigan. I think when we look at emergency and economics, and Mr. Meyer can correct me if I'm wrong, but kind of their backup plan is if we need to build a barrier, is to build it at St. Anthony Falls. And if we wait till the fish are at St. Anthony Falls, they've gone into the Minnesota River watershed. This has a great potential impact on not only our ecology, but our tourism industry in the state. And so I've got a bill here asking for $5 million to construct the barrier. And we could look to match federal dollars. And with that, I'll have Mr. Meyer speak.
Madam Chair, members, for the record, Bob Meyer, Assistant Commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources. The bill before you today would appropriate $5 million for the department to construct a sound bubble barrier to prohibit or inhibit the upstream movement of carp right now. In areas of the Mississippi River downstream, some spots are 90% invasive species, Asian carp, silver carp, grass carp. They do pose significant threats not only to the fisheries but to the safety of people using these waterways for recreation. If these species come up into our waterways and inhibit them or infest them the way they are down there, it will propose significant threats to canoeing, kayaking, boating, enjoying water sports, fishing, our habitat. What this funding will allow us to do is construct a barrier along the Mississippi River somewhere between probably Winona and Prescott. We're looking at a couple different spots at locks and dams, 11 and 14, maybe down a little farther, to stop the movement. It's not a silver bullet in any means, but it will definitely give us some time to develop new technologies as well.
Questions? I think that was complete. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Hansen moves House File 1786.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I will have three people that will be available for questions.
And Representative Hansen, to get the bill before us as you desire, we will also move
AO70278.
Representative Hansen moves 0278 to get the bill before us. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion carries. The bill is before us as amended.
And then, Madam Chair, I would like to do an oral amendment just to, so we're matching the Senate, which may help in negotiations. They upped the governor's request to $15 million. And so I would amend line, if you have.
And that is to the amendment. We see that before us on the members. This RIM was in the governor's supplemental bonding bill. That's where the $10 million comes from and the language. And you are amending that on the amendment 1-5 to?
$15 million. And then on line 1.18, it would be the administration is instead of 1.5 would be 2.250, comma, 000.
Is that clear, members? On line 1.8, changing it to 1.5 to 2.250.
I'd move that oral amendment.
No, 2.5. Representative Deb Tyson has a question.
Madam Chair, not a question, but I would also assume that on line 1.10 of your amendment, you'd change the $10 million in bond authorization to match the appropriation.
Correct.
$15 million.
Thank you.
So there are three changes. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries. Now the bill is before us.
The bill is amended. As Chair Hausman noted, this is the $10 million was in the governor's budget. Members of the committee and the audience may be familiar with the history of funding CREP, the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program. And last year there was a request for additional dollars for CREP. That didn't occur, and so there was flexibility provided to the Board of Water and Soil Resources to use RIM dollars for the Wetland Reserve Program. The reason we put the $15 million in is that the Federal Natural Resources Conservation Service has $15 million, and correct me if I'm wrong, I have NRCS here, $15 million available in federal dollars that are part of the existing farm bill that will go away on December 31st. So there are federal funds out there that we can match. In terms of an emergency, we've had a number of reports and we've heard bills in other committees about loss of wetlands in our state. One way to get those is to restore wetlands. It isn't easy and it isn't cheap. And getting a federal dollars to match the state dollars is one way through the proven Wetlands Reserve Program. This provides jobs around the state. It takes people to restore these wetlands. And the programs would be occurring around the state. I have with me Kevin Lyons from the Board of Water and Soil Resources, Tim Kohler from the Federal Natural Resources Conservation Service, and Ryan Henniger from Ducks Unlimited. So we have the state, the federal, and the nonprofit that are available for questions if members have any.
Questions of the author or our resources here? We're trying to read quickly, so.
And there is a handout that I think is going around. This is a good program, right?
This is any additional, I mean, testifiers are welcome if you have something additionally to add.
Madam Chair and committee members.
Mr. Schulberg has a question.
Just a question. I thought there was some issues last year with the previous appropriations had not been expended. And can you clarify that?
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair and Representative Schulberg, you are correct that the authorizations were for the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program with increasing land values and crop production. There was a bill. The Board of Water and Soil Resources adjusted the rental rates in mid-year last year to try to be competitive on those programs with the market out there. That has accelerated a little bit the Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program, but there are willing landowners in the Wetland Reserve Program. The federal government has made some changes on their appraisal process on what they are paying for wetland reserve programs. And so what the state and the federal government did is work out a system where they can bring the rental rates up with the RIM reserve to be competitive with the market and enroll programs. So they have recently, I believe, about $8 million of the $20 million that was allocated in 2005 went to WRP. It's been going into the wetland program rather than the CREP program, because the CREP program hasn't been working as well.
Representative Solberg.
Madam Chair, the new governor's change, I haven't read it thoroughly, but the $10 million is for the CREP.
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, and it's for RIM reserve that could be used for, that has the flexibility to be used for CREP and for WRP. But in all likelihood, it's my understanding, and the Board of Water and Soil Resources to correct me, it's going to be WRP, because they've got people there right now that are waiting.
Well, Madam Chair, just one other additional thing then. If you use $20 million, there's $8 million that you've expended, the 20. The 12, is that just sitting there in the CREP?
Madam Chair,
please identify yourself for the record.
Excuse me, Madam Chair, I'm Kevin Lines. I'm the Conservation Easement Manager for the Board of Water and Soil Resources. Representative Solberg, the present status of the CREP 2 program and our RIM reserves from the original $20 million in bonding that the state Bowser received in 2005, we expect as of July 1st of 07 that 93% of that bonding appropriation will be obligated. And so that is in a combination in both the CREP 2 and the RIM Reserve Partnership. So this is where the emergency lies, is we're going to have most of the funding gone. We would not be able to look at leveraging the $15 million for the WRP program. That's the emergency.
I think that's what the Ways and Means Chair was looking for. And there's another testifier who had some comments.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Tim Kohler, and I am the Assistant State Conservationist with the USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service. Sorry for the mouthful. And I would just like to echo what Rick and Kevin have said and talk about kind of the emergency that we're talking about. And it's on the last few pages of your handout. As Rick, Representative Hansen mentioned, actually on June 1st, if we don't have our money allocated out and commitments from willing landowners signed, we have to actually turn back our money. So the emergency that's in front of us is trying to get fair offers to landowners to make sure that we don't turn that money back. We have until September 30th to actually obligate our money, so we'll have enough time, you know, in those few months period to go ahead and do that. The other good news to you is that my boss, Bill Hunt, who some of you have met and heard from before, he's already gone to Washington and asked for more money from Minnesota, as he always does. So the hope is that with this effort, not only can we secure and hopefully deal with the existing resources that we have in the state right now to fund some of the $70 million worth of backlog, but hopefully we're going to get some more money from states that can't use it because they don't have some of the partnerships that we're talking about here. So thank you.
Sure, just one quick question. Is the match a one-to-one match?
Mr. Kohler?
Well, the match is, it's not a direct one-to-one match. It can be a little bit flexible based on the site, but from our experience with the first $6 million that we used, it was about a 1.4 federal to about a 1 state. So it was actually better than one-to-one for the state.
Further questions? I think our questions are answered.
And Madam Chair, I just want to note that I've known Mr. Kohler for a long time, so I'm quite content with him, with me calling me by my first name.
Thank you.
I would renew my motion.
And all of these bills are laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you. Representative Ward.
Madam Chair.
Representative Scalzi.
I would move House File 1962 be heard and laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Capital Investment Finance Bill.
Representative Ward, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's my pleasure, Madam Chair, and I am here today to talk about, and members, I'm here today to talk about House File 1962, and it's I'm excited because I've been sitting and watching some of your testimony, and you said, Madam Chair, that first of all, we don't have any audio or video, so that's a good thing, I think. But we do have color, so you will be getting a handout with color, and we do bring fun, lots of fun. And at this time of on a Friday, we all need some of that, don't we? Madam Chair, this bill is a win-win situation for not only our area in central Minnesota, but also for the state of Minnesota. And I have two testifiers today that are going to testify to that. It is a bill that is we're asking for $125,000 of bonding money, kind of an emergency situation, just like you heard a minute ago. But it will produce $700,000 of money for our area and our state. And Representative Solberg is well aware of the need and the good that this bill will do. I just want to talk about what this bill will do. This is to build some trails within our Clean Range recreation area, and that was established by the state of Minnesota to for compatible multiple recreation opportunities. It will provide natural surface trails for hiking, trail running, mountain biking in the summer, and similar activities in the winter. Established with the master plan of our recreation area. U.S. Congressman Oberstar has already acquired the federal dollars in the amount of $600,000 for the Natural Trail Service. However, we need the $125,000 match, one-to-one money, and the Trail Bike Association is also involved in matching the money with us to access that money. And my two testifiers will talk about that. With the match, this project is ready to go. There's an agent need now to get the trails built now, providing jobs, opportunity development, economic development for our area and the state of Minnesota. The center would specialize in teaching people from around the world how to build sustainable, multi-purpose natural surface trails in the areas of highly degraded landscapes such as found in our abandoned mines in the Crosby-Ironton area. Example center will focus on the trails built in the Cuyuna Country State Regional Recreation Area. The skills learned are applicable to all kinds of sustainable natural surface trails, non-motorized and motorized. This center will be an economic asset to our local communities as well as the state of Minnesota. And lastly, Madam Chair and members, this center will recognize Minnesota's investment in transforming degraded land to a positive, productive land use. And so I will now turn over to my testifiers who will introduce themselves and explain their part of this as well.
Mr. Grilly, first.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dorian Grilly. I'm the Executive Director of the Parks and Trails Council, and I will be very brief. The Parks and Trails Council supports this bill. We lobbied for the federal highway money, and we're very excited about helping implement this. Parks and Trails has helped acquire land in the Cuyuna Recreation Area. A lot of the land is already acquired. It's state trust fund land or other land. But we are working right now to acquire land for the Cuyuna Rec Area, and also the Cuyuna Lake State Trail, which these trails will tie into. And I will turn it over to Dale Grunberg from the International Mountain Bike Association.
Mr. Grunberg, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dale Grunberg with the International Mountain Biking Association. First of all, let me thank you for this opportunity to request funding for this project. As the representative has indicated, both federal and private funds totaling $720,000 are already secured and available, contingent upon this $125,000 in state match funds. I'd refer you to the handout, and if we can skip the first page and just take a look at the second page in the handout. The initial funds from the federal side have been committed since 2005. International Mountain Bike Association, or IMBA, has made these funds available this year contingent upon the state match. So what will these dollars provide? The third page in your handout lists the facilities that will be created.
This is an interesting thing. Do I understand that they give you funds and then they take the fee back?
Isn't that wonderful? I'd like to be a part of that. But I guess that's the rules of the game. What will be constructed from this project is a total of 40 miles of natural surface, sustainable mountain bike trails, 11 scuba diving sites, one new camping facility, one renovated camping facility, 13 kayak canoe routes, 6 boat ramps, and 2 additional picnic shelters. Now, in addition, the IMBA funds that are targeted for this, and the reason IMBA is involved with this, is that IMBA has a focus on making this one of its national trail centers. There are currently four trail centers in consideration in Minnesota, Florida, Pennsylvania, and Oregon. Right now, because of the funding available for this site, it's at the top of the list for IMBA. In fact, there are dozens of sites around the country on the waiting list, but I would say Cuyuna is number one on the list right now. As an example of economic impact, the best example I can use is a University of Wisconsin study that was done in 1997 in the Hayward, Wisconsin area, focusing solely on mountain biking. And that study showed a $1.2 million economic impact in a 30-mile radius around that area. With the multi-use and the additional facilities here, I think the economic impact in that Brainerd, Crosby-Ironton area would be far greater. And so I would urge you to support this. It's a great opportunity. And being able to leverage the federal funds and private funds from IMBA on a 6-to-1 ratio, I think is an outstanding opportunity to get the National IMBA Trail Center located in Minnesota. I thank you.
Any further comments or questions by members?
I have a further comment, Madam Chair, but I'll wait for questions.
Representative Ward, I think you can go ahead.
Well, as my testifier said, the return on every dollar spent is going to return to us $8 just to do the project. That's the only investment that I know that's better than that is early childhood right now. So I just want you to keep that in mind as you make the decisions and also the urgency of it so that we don't lose the dollars. And then also, we're asking for support, please, obviously, but also please, once we get this, don't even wait until this is built. Come up and see this beautiful area and bring your families, and we always love to have all citizens up in that beautiful lakes area up there. So thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
And members.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, before you get to his area, you can stop in Aiken and have some deets so he spends them in mind right next door.
Representative Dabney, are all of your testifiers here? Good.
Madam Chair.
Representative Scalzi.
I would move House File 1269 be heard and laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Capital Investment Finance Bill.
Representative Dabney, welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Representative Scalzi, thank you for that.
And you're joined by Pat Bourne from the city of Minneapolis?
I am. Director of Finance, or a.k.a. the Finance Guy. House File 1269 relates to the Target Center in downtown Minneapolis. I have a hard time describing anything I remember being built as an aging facility, but I appear to be arriving at that point in life where I get to do that. But the Target Center now, in terms of this sort of a facility, is an aging facility. But at the same time, it's a linchpin to the vitality of our downtown. A venue where people come virtually every night of the year for some form of entertainment, activity, and opportunities for recreation in our downtown. The assistance that this bill requests will enable the city to renovate the Target Center, updating its facilities, and assure that it remains an attractive venue for the wide variety of entertainment that takes place there. With that, Madam Chair, I would like to ask Mr. Bourne to walk through the specifics and the details.
Mr. Bourne, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, I'll keep this brief. We do have a fact sheet that I think perhaps is available to you, and if it's not, I'll certainly make it available to the committee staff.
We appear not to. So, yes, if you could...
Madam Chair, just a brief overview. The city bought Target Center from its then owner, the owner of the Timberwolves, in 1995 at a price of around $85 million. We hire a separate manager to manage the facility and book other events other than basketball events, as well as maintaining the building and promoting the building to others. In fact, this weekend we are hosting the girls' state high school basketball tournament, and tomorrow night pitting the two of the best public high schools in the state, Minneapolis South and St. Paul Central.
Well, we know how that one's going to go.
So Go Tigers, would that be a good addition right now?
As the parent of three graduates of the Minneapolis school, I do read the newspaper, and unfortunately I do think I know how the game is going to turn out. But we're happy that both of those teams are so successful this year, and they're playing in Minneapolis. At any rate, the city, when it acquired Target Center, did so to not only save the building, but to make sure that the team remained in Minnesota for a long time. In fact, 30 years from 1995. We also have committed more than $6 million a year to the principal and interest on these bonds, as well as additional funds for capital improvements. But this building is 17 years old this year. It does need constant capital improvements to remain as vital as it is to Minneapolis as Excel Center is to St. Paul. And capital improvements, as well as now a needed operating subsidy to the building, is necessary to maintain the vitality of this building. We are now, as committee members may know, we are now changing managers in the building. The economics of the manager has changed over time, and it's become necessary for us to find a new manager, and as well as to probably financially support that new manager in this building. I'll stop there. I know your time is precious, and be happy to answer questions.
Questions of the author or the testifier? Representative Peterson, I thought you might have one or two.
Madam Chair, I promised Pat Bourne, my old friend, that I wouldn't say a thing.
Oh. I thought you were going to ask his opinion about Mall of America or anything like that. No.
I asked him, he wouldn't answer.
I think there are no questions. So, Representative Dabney, if you have some concluding comments, otherwise...
Madam Chair, in the spirit of mid-afternoon on Friday after a long week, thank you for the consideration. We appreciate the time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members. And thank you.
Is Representative Lilly in
there? I'd leave you alone.
Is Representative Lilly here? Is looking for an author?
Madam Chair.
Representative Lee.
Well, he's coming up. I just want to ask a question.
Yes, Representative Lee.
Have you totaled the total amount in this bill? I don't know if it's over a couple billion or not.
But who's counting, Representative Lee?
I hope you got a good computer.
We are in a 2-year cycle, fortunately. We're waiting for an author. We see no authors currently. Is there an author? Oh. whichever author arrives first gets their bill heard first.
You're always here.
Oh, well, yeah, he's here. I wonder if we could, we won't move the bill until the author arrives, but if we could have the testifiers to House File 1528. Is he speaking to it or are you? If you would please come forward, and why don't we take the testimony in while we're waiting for the author. Oh, the second author is here. The second author will move, and now the author has arrived. Also, I will move House File Number 1528. Representative Tamar, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, thank you. Members,
we can let you catch your breath if there's the two people with you would like to.
I would just like to introduce House File 1528, and then I'll turn it over to my testifiers. Madam Chair, members, this is last year we had a $12 million request to in the bonding bill for renovations to the Ordway Performing Arts, and We received $7.5 million of that request, and we're here today to ask the committee for $4.5 million to complete this project. The Ordway was built 22 years ago. It's really the one of the jewels of downtown St. Paul. It has a regional and statewide significance with plays and St. Paul Chamber Orchestra, and I'm sure most of you have been there. It's a beautiful theater, but it is aging and it needs improvements. And so I think I'll let the two testifiers explain what the $4.5 million will do to complete this project. So if you would like to maybe introduce yourself for the record and let's see.
Great. Thank you, Representative, and thank you, Madam Chair and Committee, for hearing us today. I'm Jeff Bach, and I'm the Interim President and CEO of Ordway Center. And just a brief background, the original $12 million request was to address mainly operational cost improvements, energy improvements, and community access for Ordway Center. We've never had any significant investment in the building for renovations in its 22 years, and I think some of the behind-the-scenes state of the equipment reflects that. So within the request is really the emphasis on those areas. Much of what our highest priority items are related to the operational cost reduction and energy savings, and additionally for community access. And some of the things we're looking at for community access are in the area of adding a connector from the Skyway and Tunnel system to Ordway Center. There's the tunnel through Rice Park that goes very near Ordway Center, but we don't connect to Ordway Center, so it would be far more connected to the city system and also to the River Center campus to have that connection in place. And then also adding a multi-purpose community room. Ordway Center is more and more becoming a community destination. We're doing a lot more activities there with the arts organizations that perform there, making much better use of the McKnight Theater, so we're bringing more people into the center. So having a community and education room would be very advantageous. So those are the main elements within the bill request.
And we also have Lee Cook.
Right. Thank you. Welcome, Chair. I'm Lee Cook, and I work with Ordway Center.
Thank you. Do you have additional testimony?
I don't. I'm here to answer questions if there are any.
Is there Representative Lanning?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And we're very fortunate to have Ordway here in the state of Minnesota, and I've always enjoyed going there myself. In fact, I was there just last week trying to go by the Skyway and had to go outside to get there, so I certainly appreciate that part of this proposal. My question is, with regard to the community room, given the close proximity to River Center and what the plans are there, how does that proposal, you know, fit with the use of the River Center, and could there be possibly going together with the River Center and having space there that would meet that need?
Mr. Bakken?
Yes. Madam Chair, Representative, we are in active discussions with River Center to look at ways to best use all the space on the campus. We just don't have any room right now in Ordway Center that's at all enclosed. As you know, we've got some beautiful lobby space, which works very well for community functions. But we really need to have a more enclosed area that's yet in a public space where we can do educational activities, development activities for Ordway Center, receptions for key guests, that type of thing. And it's really important that we have something on that in the building. We certainly could go over to 317 or River Center. It's not easy now without the connection, but we'd really think we could do much better with having this facility inside the venue itself.
Thank you.
Further questions? Representative Singleton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know if I missed this. If you talked about the appropriations from last year, I think it was $7.5 million. Just wondering where you're at with spending those dollars.
Mr. Bakken.
Madam Chair, Representative, we've been doing quite a bit of detailed planning, implementation activity. We haven't begun to spend the money yet. We're in the process of negotiating with the city and the finance department at the state terms under which to apply the money, so we really haven't started spending anything yet, but we're well along in the planning process, and as soon as we clarify the language as to how the money can be used, we will be very aggressively implementing what's already been authorized, at least those highest priority items in what has just been authorized.
Senator Singleton?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question about the carpeting, and I remember some kind of discussion last year about was that bondable or not bondable. Where is that in your discussion?
Representative Haymar would probably love to answer that one.
Madam Chair, the carpeting is was removed from the from the planned renovation. There are some problems with the carpeting,
but the decision was it wasn't going to be part of this.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I also have a amendment, if it's in order. I understand the Department of Finance is recommending that we amend it to state that it is added to the 2006 appropriation to make it clear that last year and this year's bill are the same project. Is that?
Oh, I see.
Is that?
Is that? Yes. Yes.
If that's in order, then I'd offer the oral amendment at this point.
And we don't have that copied, members, but how would... Ms. Dyson?
Madam Chair, it'd be a fairly straightforward amendment that, and Department of Finance had provided me with basically the language, and I filled in the section numbers, but it just would be adding on line 11, this appropriation is in addition to the appropriation in laws 2006, chapter 258, section 21, subdivision 21, paragraph B.
So that it's set in that context. Does everybody understand that? Representative Mahoney moves that amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Representative Carlson.
Just a quick question. I'm curious, Steve, if you just add it to it. Just send the full project. So
they indicate yes.
Yes, it is.
Representative Singlestead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just whenever I read the word design now in any bill, I'm always thinking of should there be pre-design in there. So I don't know if you have any.
We had one particular bill where we realized it should have said pre-design design. We're wondering if that's the case here. No,
Madam Chair, I'm really not in a position to address that.
Okay.
I don't know the language.
No, we'll figure that
I'll
one out.
Look into that.
Says no. I think we have no further questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Mahoney, are we revisiting House File, or is this something else, or?
Madam Chair, there was a question about some information on the bonding and the bonding numbers, and then there's an amendment that I'd like to do if I could.
Okay. Representative Mahoney. Now, we previously moved this House file, so I think it's still before us.
Yes, we just laid it over, so yes. I shouldn't have to move it.
No, it's...
Let me grab one of those amendments.
Do you want to speak first to the...
There's that. There you go.
Madam Chair, I apologize. I didn't realize the bill was going to be up today. Otherwise, in your committee, I would always try to wear a tie and a sport coat and not be so bright.
We need a little of that. We'll pretend we're seeing the sun outside the window or something.
I figured I've gotten my 65 hours in.
Oh, I remember this. Yes.
Yeah. Madam Chair, if you might, is it all right if I do the amendment first?
Yes.
And then I'd like to move, I don't have a number, A1 amendment. And what this is comfort language more than it is really anything to protect. For the hospitals, we don't want to have, they were kind of concerned that these bio facilities could be turned into hospitals or something else like that. And this just states that they cannot be considered a hospital or licensed as a hospital. And there's no opposition from the university. I think it's just fine and would ask you to.
It came up just at the end of the last meeting and we didn't have an amendment drafted and so we wanted to be more deliberate about it. It just assures that the biomedical science research buildings are not hospitals.
That is correct, Madam Chair.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries.
Got a strong voice here.
Yes.
Madam Chair, Representative Pearson had some questions and others added to that. They wanted some more financial information. With my office being so neat and tidy, The department had to come and provide this to me again, because I know they had already. This is a fiscal note narrative for 132, and it gives the bond sale dates, the interest rates, the sold in, the dollars in millions that are sold in that particular time, and then the expectation on the interest rates and the bond sales amounts and the premiums paid to the state. So, and we do have finance here. If there's any questions that I can't handle, and when it gets to finance, you probably would have to call them down for almost any question.
So, members, we were raising a number of questions, and what you have before you is attempt for
what we what I have
clarity.
Before, it's kind of trying to clarify the amounts, the dates that the bonds would be released, or the expectations that they would be released, and the amounts sold. And then on page, well, I guess it's page 3, the projections and the bond sales and then the premiums paid, as again. Now, if there is a question, I can certainly ask Mr. Spousen if he would come down and explain it to us.
I suppose this, as much as anything, is for staff, so that we yes. make certain that we have these numbers before us. Any questions to this? If not, thank you for this additional information.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee.
For our files. Representative Lilly. We're getting to the end, members. Okay. Representative Mahoney, would you...
I would love to move House File 1522 for Representative Lilly.
And would you further move the DE1?
So be it. So move.
The DE1 is a delete-all. That's the we need to get it in the form the author wants to present it to us. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion carries. Is this also the author's? Oh, this is somebody else. Thank you. Representative Lilly, welcome to the committee.
Hi, Madam Chair and members. Thank you for having us today and such short notice. Thank you. We'll be as brief as we can. We're before you asking for a $650,000 appropriation for putting a tunnel through at the intersection of Highway 36 and 120. It's on the Gatewell Trail right now, and it's a state DNR trail. And it's one of the most used trails in the state of Minnesota. I have a guest here with me. North St. Paul's a smaller city. We have I'm not really sure what to call him. He does so many different tasks, but he's Scott Dudick, and he's our fire chief, community developer, just a lot of different things. So I'll just pass it to Mr. Dudick, and he can kind of say some details. And I know Representative Peterson has an amendment on his own kind of issue, so however you want to handle it.
Well, we'll get the explanation to this, and then I'm thinking this is the Representative Cole's issue, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Representative Dudek.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. It brought along a handout that we passed around. There's some information in that handout highlighting the use of this trail. It is definitely the highest use trail in the state system, the Gateway Trail that runs through the city of North St. Paul. Currently, we're also undertaking a highway redevelopment project that will be starting April 2nd through North St. Paul. It's a $31 million project that we've been working on for several years, and we'll actually start in a few short days. And what we're looking at with this is the last at-grade connection of the Gateway Trail at Highway 36 and 120. Our hope is that we can put the funding together to be able to complete a tunnel section at this location while the contractor is in the area over the next year or 2 years doing the work, as a large cost saving and saving that mobilization to bring another contractor in and rebidding this project. As you can see on the last two or three pages of this handout, it is a very highly congested area with traffic. There's some color pictures there at the end of that handout that we put around. Again, it's at the intersection of 36 and 120, and it lists the proposed trail crossing at that location. So with that, any support we could obtain for this would be greatly appreciated.
And so, members, though you see Highway 120 in the bill, it is, in fact, Highway 36 that the trail crosses. Is that right?
It actually crosses Highway 120 at 36.
At 36.
Right.
Crosses 120 at 36.
Correct.
Madam Chair?
Oh. Representative Lilly.
Just to make it clear, too, this, you know, it's a border for our community. It really, I mean, it's, yes, it's important. A lot of people, but a lot of them are really passing through our community. It's not just for North St. Paul. I mean, it's really Washington County's there on one side of 120, and we're on the other, and in Oakdale, who also is in favor of this. Scott Dudek here, who's with me, is also our police and public safety director, and so part of his fear is he sees the, it's really a dangerous intersection. A lot of people are coming fast, and the pictures, of course, don't show motion, but they do show traffic volume, and it's just a, it's a scary situation. We don't want people to die, and he's already had to respond to some really bad situations. So that's, and if the equipment's already there for the highway project, we feel that there would be some savings by kind of pushing this through now. The DNR quoted us yesterday about $1 million, but he was able to talk to some folks today, and this number is really real because of the savings by having the equipment there already. So the conservatives in the group would really like this.
Representative Mahoney.
Well, Madam Chair and members, this is, you know, Representative Lilly says to the fact that it's a regional use trail. The Gateway Trail runs through my district and is well used, not only just in his district and at Highway 120. It's used quite a bit through multiple districts. And this actually was, for those of us who have been around for a while, this used to be part of Congressman Bruce Vento's daily regimen or weekly regimen. He'd do Phelan twice and then head out the Gateway Trail. And so it is an East Metro kind of trail that goes all the way out to Stillwater. And actually, you know, maybe I should vote against this because I wouldn't have to go out there so often and end up spending money out in Stillwater. But we have to buy dinner for someone when we go out there.
Representative Leader has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Lilly, as I look at the second picture from the back.
Yes, sir.
Maybe it's a third. It says proposed trail crossing tunnel. I guess it says that. No. Is that the trail through a service road? That can't be Trunk Highway 220 or 36. Does it go left to right or right to left and parallel on the bottom?
So the trail,
where's the
would,
trail going there?
You would actually follow the arrow. The trail.
Oh, okay.
The truck that you see.
Oh, diagonal.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Representative Leader. The picture that you have, it actually shows the truck actually in the crosswalk. And that's quite often what happens is that people, for one reason or another, just do not respect it. We see it all the time where, you know, the flashing yellow lights, but people do not stop at these things. Or this doesn't have that even, but it does have the road markings and whatnot, and people do tend to, unfortunately, ignore it. So it is pretty dangerous. And, you know, I mean, obviously we could hope people do better jobs, but the reality is...
Leader.
I'm not questioning the thing, but I think you're going to have a lot of bake sales if you're only going to spend $2,000. Or is that an open tunnel? Because what are you going to put? Do you have a culvert or something? I'm not questioning. I think it's a good, but I think your costs are way low. You're getting
some
other money.
You wonder if it can be built for that amount, you're saying.
No, it can't be built for that.
Uh-huh. Mr.
You must be getting other money.
Mr. Dudek?
$650,000 is the number that we've been allocated for this project.
You're only asking 209, isn't that correct? Am I looking around?
There is a...
Madam Chair and Representative Leader, I think, and I'm sorry for this confusion, I think
I
you're
think
looking at Mr. Peterson's amendment that he's proposing to offer here in a few minutes. And so our proposal is for $650,000, and we hope it's what's needed, and we believe it is. But thank you for your 100% right. 200 would not do it.
Any further questions?
That's
Jingleston.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Lilly, I know that in last year's bonding bill there was $750,000 for around this trail. Can you tell me what that was used for or how that ties into this project?
Madam Chair and... Representative Tingelstad, I'm sorry. I don't think it was in our corridor. This corridor runs from St. Paul through Representative, actually quite close to the Capitol here. Maybe
All the way out to Stillwater, although that probably was a different portion of it.
And it's one thing that we did not mention on this trail. It's pretty neat. They're hoping to send it all the way up to Duluth at some point. I mean, it's be a continued trail. So.
Any further questions?
Representative
Tingelstad.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Lilly, I'm just wondering if there's any federal dollars available, if you've sort of searched that out.
Madam Chair and Representative Tingelstad, we have not at this point, and we're just pursuing it. This is one avenue, and hopefully we can be successful. The 36 is going through there, and it's a DNR trail, so it does seem to make some sense that the state of Minnesota would help make that successful. On page two, I just to throw out here real quick, I know you're busy, and or three rather. It's amazing when you look at the graph of the use, and if you get an extra chance to look at that, it's amazing how well used this particular trail is. So I don't know if that really answers your question, but
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and yes, Representative Lilly, you're right. I've used that trail, and it's like traffic jams. There's just so many people on that trail. It's so highly used. So yeah, you're right. It's a great project.
And just to remind members, as you introduced it, you said the reason you're before us now is there is construction equipment out there right now on another project, and if this were done as part of that, the cost of the tunnel would in fact be significantly less. Representative Lilly.
Madam Chair and members, yes, that's it exactly, and that's part of this bead, and the thought process is I believe strongly that the cost would go up greatly if it was a project on its own and equipment would have to be called in and that sort of thing.
Representative Peterson has an amendment to your bill, and Representative Coles had raised an issue with us earlier, and at the time we thought there might be some language in a governor's supplemental bill. That was not the case. So Representative Peterson moves the 0389 amendment. Representative Peterson, just speak to the amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And it is an amendment to the 1522 DE1. And there's a addition to that in the wordings. I have it marked, and it says acquisition, development, and rehabilitation of the loose line. And I'm pleased to offer this today. This is the finishing of the trail. It's 11 miles of the loose line starting just west of Watertown to the McLeod County line. There are $283,000 in federal money available to go with this, and it's a $500,000 project. And the reason I'm interested, where the trail begins, I would guess north of the trail, a driver and a 9-iron. I have a daughter, a son-in-law, 3 grandkids, 4 Grand Brittany Spaniels, 12 Grand Quarter Horses on one of the urban sprawl environments that my family has added to the growing part of that part of the world. So I know the loose trail reasonably well. So I would move that approval.
And Representative Solberg, you had a question, but it's probably to the author. And so
you answered my question.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. And then Representative Riddle.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I really feel this is one of the best amendments that I've seen come forth. You may not realize this, but it comes within just a couple of miles of Greenleaf Lake State Park.
Well, with that ringing endorsement, members, the 0389 amendment, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion carries. That is amended. And do you have any concluding comments?
Yeah, thank you very much for your time. We conferred here for a second, and to answer Representative Tingelstad's question, and Arissa could probably really, from last year and you as well. I think the money that you referred to went to property acquisition along the trailway up further north, so from Stillwater and beyond. So
Representative Tingelstad,
that's our best effort.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Lilly, and just one other quick thing. You said you could probably keep the prices down because the equipment's there now, but, I mean, by the time we do the bonding bill and it's signed, and, you know, we're probably looking summer at the earliest, and do they have to do pre-design, and will the equipment still be there by the time the money's actually available?
Mr. Dudek.
Yes, actually, this project is going to be starting in April of this year. It's actually a two-year project.
2 years.
So this would still work out well for that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Thank you very much for your
time. Representative Lanchesky.
Thank you. Thank you.
Representative Scalzi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would move that House File 513 be heard and laid over for possible conclusion in the Mountain Vista Capital Investment Finance Bill.
Representative Lanchesky, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Welcome.
And members, I will say that we may possibly be including this on a tour when we go to that part of the area, possibly when we go to visit the zoo. But we thought we would hear it now, and you'll have a chance to know a little bit about it when we go.
Representative Lanchesky. The Marine Band.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Riddle?
I don't think we need a tour of this one. This is one we could probably just pass right on and vote.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Riddle really supports the data credit. I think he's very helpful. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. And 30 seconds is this. I just want to thank Representative Housen, who has been incredibly gracious to me and her staff in paying attention to this very small little item for many years. She knows I've been trying to get this thing for many, many years. She, along with Representative Osmond, have been two members who have paid very close attention to this project. And I don't want to use time because Representative Housen has been willing to come to the site. I will just tell you that it was a MnDOT bridge. It was constructed in 1920. It was deeded to the city of Bloomington against its will. Did not want to take ownership of the bridge because it was dilapidated. It's our former highway in the area. When the new Highway 77 Cedar Bridge went in, it became ownership to the city. The city had to close traffic across the bridge in 1993, and then it even had to close traffic for bikers and hikers and birders, and it really was a transit way for the South Metro in 2002 because it's so unsafe. It is leaching lead paint into the Minnesota River. It is an incredibly beautiful jewel, but is just a problem at this point and is really a transit corridor that we have now lost due to the fact that bikers cannot get across anymore. And with that, I'll take questions, or I think I'm the last bill, so I'm sure you want to adjourn.
Representative Erdahl has been waiting all day. So, and so this is now, on either side there is a bike trail, but there is not a way to get from one point to another. Is that what I understand?
For a long time, even the city had to try to catch bikers kind of running across this bridge carrying their bike. It's posted that you can't be on there because this really is the way for people in the southern half of the metro who are biking to the Capitol and biking to downtown Minneapolis to get across. And so there are trails on both sides. We just can't get folks across the river now. So they're literally taking their bikes 15 miles out of the way to get to this bridge, or they can't use this bridge anymore. And actually, I've been amazed at all the staff in the Capitol and all the people who bike, who know of this corridor and are very familiar with this situation. And it's just an incredible location. I really hope you can come because you will be amazed.
We'll look forward to that. Representative Tinglestad has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Lanchesky, maybe this is technical. I don't know. I'm looking at line 9 in your bill where it talks about removal and replacement. So I'm looking at this picture, and so it had been part of a road project where cars could ride. Is that right? Was this a railroad? What was this?
Representative Lanchesky. Thank you, Madam Chair. It was a Minnesota highway.
Okay.
Minnesota highway, MnDOT. Built it in 1920, and for all the folks who live in the South Metro, Representative Osmond used to always tell the story of when he was a kid, it's the kind of bridge you drove your car over, and if you had big side mirrors, you had to watch it or you're going to hit them. But that was the way, and when I was a child as well, there were only two ways to get to the South Metro, and this was a very actually heavily trafficked area. It would flood in the spring, so it was constructed as a Minnesota highway and then given to the city of Bloomington once MnDOT was prepared to make a newer, better project.
So to follow up then, Madam Chair, Representative Lanchesky, I'm wondering if in the bill on line 9, if you need to say replacement as a bicycle trail or something. I mean, if you take it literal, it would be replacement as a road. And it doesn't sound like you want that, right?
Madam Chair, Representative Tingle said you're absolutely correct. I don't want that. We're looking for just pedestrian and bike access. We did rehabilitate one bridge for handicap accessibility in the South Metro. Our intent would be able to do that as well so that people who so that people who are disabled can get down into the valley. And there is, believe it or not, quite a large group of ornithologists, I think is the right term for bird watchers,
mm-hmm.
who have bemoaned the loss of this area as well.
Representative Singleton. Thank you, Madam Chair. And if I look to counsel there, I'd like to offer an oral amendment. I don't know what the correct words are on line 9 there, if it's replacement as a bicycle bridge, trail bridge. If Ms. Dyson could help me, please.
Ms. Dyson? Madam Chair, Representative Tingle said perhaps it would go at the end of the sentence on line 10 where it would be for removal and replacement of the old Cedar Avenue bridge for use by pedestrians, bicyclists, and other non-motorized vehicles, unless there are motorized vehicles that you're intending to use, but the intent is recreational use. Mm-hmm. Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe I don't understand it, Representative Lanchesky. You aren't going to build another bridge for bikes, are you, with this money? Because if they take the bridge out, and the way they take bridges out, you've got a lot of abutments in there, it's going to cost $2 million for the bridge, and I don't think you mean it. I think that's normally the way they talk, but if you aren't replacing a bridge by taking this one out, building a new one, are you?
Yes, actually, we hope to, but the engineer and you will appreciate the fact that they're all sound and they will remain. It is the lead paint in the top, the planks are breaking through, so it's not to turn it into a motorized road, but it is to be able to get people across.
Madam Chair, that's a different thing. You're leaving the bridge in place, mm-hmm. and you're going to replace the deck and probably refurbish the structure. That's what you're doing.
Okay.
Because when I see it here, I thought you were going to tear the whole bridge down and take out the abutments out of the river channel, and that's it, as I read this. When they take a bridge out and they bid a bridge, they would be taking, like I say, the steel would probably be written in the contract. It would belong to the contractor, and he'd have to get rid of the concrete and the river and everything else. But you're maintaining that they're going to keep the structure but rehab it to use it for bicycle. Is that correct?
Representative Lanchesky.
Madam Chair, I should have brought my Bloomington City engineer and all his group.
Well,
we will be able
to see this, and we have some time for the language because we're going to obviously not be putting it in this year's bill, but next year. So we've got some time, and so we'll just note that we have to work on the intent, and really when we see it, we'll also get a better sense of it.
Madam Chair, if I may, with Representative Leader. This has been a confusing piece locally,
mm-hmm.
Because we've had people go down there and sort of look at it and go, can't you just do this? And engineers know it isn't what you can see. And there's been a lot of looking and inspecting. In fact, the bridge went through lots of inspection to make the determination by the City of Bloomington to have to close it even to foot traffic. But one of the other pieces that makes it a little more expensive is that the lead in the paint has now become almost a hazardous situation, so you can't just knock it into the river, as we understand, and create another toxic situation. You have to extract it. But you would know about that, Representative Leader, and I honestly do not.
Madam Chair, I'm not. I think it's real good what they're talking about, but I think it needs to be some clarification.
Okay. We'll work on it.
It's a different the replacement.
We've made the notes, and we'll work on the language. Representative Peterson, did you have an additional comment?
There is structural integrity, and they just need to fix it. And I would say if this gets done and gets completed, I would guess Representative Lanchesky will probably get promoted to the very first admiral of the Bloomington Navy.
Well, thank you very much for bringing the issue
to us. Thank you.
Yes. And we have one final bill, Representative Erdahl.
Representative Lanning, you can't leave now.
That tells us something, doesn't it?
Oh, really? Yeah.
Representative Erdahl moves House File 1833. There's ongoing conversation about this, and Representative Wagenius isn't here, but we have even some suggestions about language, but we can work on that later. But for now, you can just talk about the intent of this. Representative Erdahl.
All right. Thank you very much. We're down to the true believers left today. That's good. This is Greenleaf Part 2, and I do appreciate the time and effort that some of you have put into this, probably more than should, but
last Tuesday, I tried to establish some history of the park. Now I'm asking for the $500,000 from the 2005 bonding bill be used to purchase land in Greenleaf Lake State Park. Remember, this began in 1999 when citizens brought the suggestion to the DNR. Throughout 2000-2001, the DNR organized groups and meetings on the park. In 2002, the park plan recommending a park. In 2003, a proposed park is put in statute. In 2004, the word proposed was removed. In 2005, the money was put in the bonding bill. We have been at an impasse ever since. The DNR simply says, no, we won't do it. All this bill says is, do what the legislature told you to do before the DNR buys any more state park land. Now, why? In the last 100 times that I've asked people from the DNR why, the response never varies, and I give them a lot of credit for their consistency. Basically, with minor variations, it's we can't afford what we have now. Why should we do anything more? Well, I'd just like to answer briefly why I think they should do more. The people of Minnesota, through their elected representatives, have told them to. The DNR is asking for and spending millions of dollars for state park land all across Minnesota. And then they say they can't afford to put a park where there is none. This land will be lost forever if we don't act in terms of public use. The appraised value in 2003 was $2.5 million. In 2005, it was $3.2 million. There's little or no general fund money involved in this at present for the state. Meeker County expects no development for 10 years and will handle routine maintenance in the meantime. I remain willing to compromise and work out some of our points of difference and contention with this. But I do believe that this issue is bigger than just Greenleaf Park.
Just remind me of your last bill. Did it have a dollar amount? Was that $1 million?
Did the one or $1.5 million?
Okay.
I don't remember.
Okay. So this is just another
shot across the bow.
Another shot across. Okay. So any questions to this, Representative Scalzi?
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Is this an active park, or would this be like a passive park, like open space? Or would there be need for the DNR to spend a lot of money? When you think of a state park, you think of campsites and things like that. But this looks to me like pretty passive. Is that correct?
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Scalzi. The park plan calls it a minimal maintenance park. Yes, if you want to use the word passive, that is the intent, more of a rustic park, goals of water quality improving that, minimal development is what it's called in the plan.
Representative Colbert.
I'm trying to look for something, and I know in one of the, I think, Representative Ward's area, the trail that was going through is a Cuyuna recreational area, and that was established not as a state park but as a recreational area, and I think actually this started with IRRB funds to begin with, because IRRB that's in the Cuyuna range. Can someone tell me the difference between a recreational area and a state park?
We have some people here. We'd like to know the difference between a recreational area and a state park. And
Madam Chair, members of the record, Bob Myers, this is Commissioner DNR. Both outdoor or 86A.05 outlines the outdoor recreation. It's the Outdoor Recreation Act and statute, which defines what a park is, what a state recreation area is, what a wildlife management area is. And actually, outdoor state recreation area and state park are very similar. The recreation areas allow for more uses, such as hunting, walking dogs off of leash, berry picking, things like that, that you cannot do in a state park. Dogs have to be on leashes. They have to be under control. There's very limited, if any, hunting. I don't think there's a lot of difference between, in the user's eyes, between a state recreation area and a state park. Big Bog State Recreation Area. Representative Saylor had a bill before this body talking about a visitor center there. I think if you looked at that versus a state park in her district, there would be no difference. What we're talking about and what the people in the area really want is the land protected, and that's what the DNR wants to do. If it were a state recreation area, we'd be able to access a lot more dollars, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service dollars, perhaps out-state corridor, LCCMR dollars. We have this much in our state parks budget that we're required to do in 66 parks. We would access this much money if it were a state recreation area to do a lot of other things. So thank you for the question. It gives us the ability to leverage other dollars, Representative Silver, if it were a state recreation area. But being a state park, we're in competition for our operation dollars, all of our other dollars that we get for parks, higher priority in holdings within state parks that we're working on as well. So,
Madam Chair, Mr. Meyer, why would you have more funds available from one definition than another definition? Where do those funds come from?
Madam Chair, Representative Silver, we would be able to leverage other dollars from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service dollars, for example, to do what we talked about, our Working Lands Initiative, be able to leverage, Representative Hansen had a bill for some WRP dollars. Perhaps we could utilize some of those to acquire lands that would be able to be accessed for outdoor recreation purposes. Being a state park, we can only use state dollars to buy that land, or if it was donated to us, and those state dollars we receive for land acquisitions are spread out and based upon prioritization through all of our whole park system. There's other high-profile in-holdings within the state park system right now that we're purchasing land instead of purchasing the land in Greenleaf that are a higher priority. Near Strand Big Woods, there's a person who has some land there. They're interested in platting it off and having a neighborhood-type atmosphere within side of an existing state park that we have infrastructure and a lot of land there right now. It's dealing with those in-holdings that are our highest and pressing need.
Madam Chair, just a couple more questions, if I can. If the boundaries of the state for the state park are established, does this appropriation be allowed for willing sellers?
Mr. Meyer.
Madam Chair, Representative Silver, we only buy land from willing sellers. We cannot buy land for state parks unless the legislature establishes those boundaries first off. So that the first process in this was establishing the boundaries, the proposed state park that went through the legislature. During the land sales passage on the floor the last night of session several years ago, that proposed language was taken off, so then it became an official state park. The next year we received the $500,000 appropriation. Our priorities have been higher in the parks' budgets to purchase other lands, do other things, than the Greenleaf State Park piece right now. And just on the notice or the comments about requiring the legislature or the government or the governor to spend the dollars, I believe the Constitution authorizes the governor to spend bonding dollars, but it does not force him to. So that could be a concern of the bill the way it's drafted as well.
Madam Chair, look at the amendment that's before us, it is amending a appropriation of the last year's bonding bill that can be only used for that purpose, I think, in this area. I don't think I'm looking for it, I lost it. But I don't think that the commissioner has the authority to transfer this from some other to another area.
Representative Solberg, it looks as though this is a bill, 1833, it's not an amendment, and it's for acquisition of land from willing sellers.
Well, Madam Chair, but if you look at
Representative Solberg,
lines 1 through 4 on down, the current law says that the DNR can use $500,000 to purchase land within the boundaries of the Greenleaf State Park in Meeker County. if they don't do that, they have no authority to take that money and spend it any other place.
We aren't asking to spend it any other place right now. We have the $2 million out of that appropriation. We're working on high priority parcels within the existing state parks. The $500,000 is still there. We just haven't been able to come to terms to purchase the land based upon our prioritization and needs within the state park system at this time.
Well, Madam Chair, that's not the question I'm asking, though, I don't think. If even without the new proposed language that's there, it appears that, indeed, we authorize, the legislature authorizes, and you don't have to spend it. But the only way you could spend that $500,000 is to purchase land within the boundaries of the Greenleaf. And those boundaries are indeed determined. So you may have a higher priority list some other place, but you would, am I correct in you not being able to transfer this money to another priority list? Is that correct?
Mr. Mayor.
Madam Chair, Representative Silver, yes, and we are not asking for that authority. The $500,000 is sitting there. We're trying to figure out what makes the most sense. Should we buy land? Should we see what kind of deal we can get? If we buy that $500,000 or spend that, that will begin us down the road of all of our parks dollars that we get for the next probably 4 or 5 bonding cycles will need to go, or at least a portion of that will need to go to the Greenleaf area. There will also be signage and roads, campgrounds, those types of things that will be needed to put in place. That's our concern, Madam Chair.
And that was the reason for my question is how much development would occur on this park. I mean, I understand roads and campgrounds. When I looked at the picture, it looked as though it was like an open space type park. So that was why I asked that. And I think that as we spend bonding dollars, we have to always be careful of can these be sustained after they're purchased, and that's the question here. So, and maybe do you have any comments, Mr. Erdahl, on that?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. But as I said before, I don't think I said it this way, but the Meeker County Commissioners have even passed a resolution saying that they expect no development within, you know, within the next 10 years. If there is some minimal maintenance, they've agreed to do that. I'll put the signs up. I don't care.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Anybody else have any advice? Oh, here's Alice. You know how to do all this stuff.
I think for today this is probably sufficient. It's a conversation, an ongoing conversation, and so I think for now, Representative Erdahl, would you think we've accomplished today's goal? Good. Thank you. Members, this is our last day for hearings, and on Monday we need to somehow, between now and then, get a bill ready, which we would put before the committee on Monday for passage Tuesday. There are two gentlemen here. We have had Representative Leader transfer the ports bill to this committee. And if Kevin Wally would just come forward, I've told him literally 2 minutes, so that this committee understands the request of the port, since that is now in our hands. Mr. Wally.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kevin Wally. I represent the Minnesota Ports Association. The bill that was introduced this year was chief authored by Representative Pawlowski, and it's House File 612. It's a bill that would provide funds for the Port Development Assistance Program, and the legislature has over the years provided general fund appropriations or bond proceeds to capitalize that program, which provides state matching dollars for infrastructure improvements at our public ports. Specifically, there have been dock walls reinforced, intermodal access facilities have been improved, cargo handling equipment has been purchased, and there's been access channel dredging accomplished for the river ports of Red Wing, Winona, and St. Paul, and the Great Lakes Port of Duluth. There's a pent-up demand that exceeds the supply of resources each year. We're grateful for whatever resources we get, and the projects are scaled so that we can accomplish good things with even modest resources.
Representative Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, those usually, the recommendations come out of the Transportation Finance Division. We've had that every year.
Yes, and you've now sent the bill to us, I believe, yes. Thank you. This committee needed to understand that it had been. Representative Singelstad has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Wally, I just didn't catch a number. What kind of dollar amount are we looking at?
The request was $5 million. And the amounts that have been provided from year to year have varied from 1.5 to 3.5 typically.
Thank you.
Usually 2, 2.5, depending on what's been available.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And then we were just talking about the Gateway Trail today, and John Abbott tells me that an unusual circumstance has just occurred relative to the Gateway Trail that he at least wants to bring before us. Mr. Abbott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. John Abbott with Messerly and Kramer. And I'm here on behalf of David Perdo, who runs the Minnesota Zephyr. If I can make this work, I'm going to give you a quick picture. I don't think I can. Let me get over the camera. Shortest story, Madam Chair, is that the Gateway Trail, I think as some of you know, is one of the state's premier trails, runs from Duluth down to the Twin Cities and out over to the, thank you very much, can you get this right here? Out over to, kind of in the Stillwater direction. Okay. The Minnesota Zephyr, I don't know if any of you have been on the Minnesota Zephyr, but it's a dinner train. Okay, and it runs basically out of Stillwater, out into the countryside a little ways, and interestingly enough, intersects with the Gateway Trail. The owner of the Minnesota Zephyr, a fellow by the name of Dave Perdo, who I know through my work with the Railroads Association, Dave Perdo is 65 years old, he's looking at retiring, and he's got a couple of options that present themselves to him. One is to sell the Minnesota Zephyr as an operating business, and the other is to get out of the business altogether, sell his restaurant, and sell the land that now the train runs on, the tracks are on, to the state of Minnesota via the Parks and Trails Council, and connect the Gateway Trail to the St. Croix River and on into Wisconsin. In short, I don't know if you can see this.
Whoa.
I'll do it real quick. Can I? Okay, very good. This right here, thank you for letting me use the map, Dan. This right here is the Gateway Trail. This is the route of the Minnesota Zephyr. They connect right there. And David has been in some discussions with state officials, and I won't get into those details because they're not supposed to have these conversations, but they've been having some conversations about the possibility of this, the Minnesota Zephyr, becoming a trail. What is essentially being proposed is that this 65 acres of property, which is 65 acres 100 feet wide, running roughly 6 miles, be sold to the state of Minnesota, the tracks be pulled up, the ties come out, and a trail be put in here that would connect the Gateway Trail on into Wisconsin. That's the essence of it. There's been a lot of conversation about what that piece of property is worth. Essentially, it's been on two sides. It's been anywhere from $3 million to $8 million. Roughly, we're at about a $6 million price tag and sort of agreement with appraisals that have been done by some experienced appraisers for that piece of property. And Madam Chair, I just wanted to bring it to your attention right now. I appreciate ever so much for giving me this opportunity because literally it's there's a possibility of doing this year. The gentleman wants to get out of business, he wants to sell the trail, he wants to sell the business, and it presents itself to you. I didn't want the opportunity to go by without you at least having a chance to know about it.
Representative Leader has a question.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Apitz, generally with a trail, would you presume he'd take the rail and the tie and everything out and clean it up? Because that would be a big cost if the state would have to pick that up. I imagine they'd sell the rail and the ties prior to the... Because normally, and doesn't the adjacent landowner have first rate? Is it written up that way in that particular railroad?
First rate, you purchase the property?
Right. They do have in some cases that I'm aware of when we dealt with.
Yeah. Madam Chair, three quick answers. One is, I don't typically sit in front of committees and encourage trails and trains to run side by side. You'll never hear me say that except in this one instance. Secondly, the discussion I had with Mr. Perdo was that he would take up the rail and the tie and basically grade it. The state would have the responsibility, I think, for fixing up beyond that. And the reason he can do that is because, while the ties cost something to get rid of, the steel rail is worth about $100. Well, it's worth something.
Yeah, I don't know quite what it is. Forgive me. I don't remember the figure. This is a quick conversation. And I believe he has the rights to sell it and to trade it off. I don't think there's a right of first refusal because he bought this property himself from the BNSF some time back. So, Madam Chair, thank you for the time. I appreciate your consideration.
Did you have an additional question, Representative Leader?
No, but it's just a comment. Sometimes in the old railroad deed, the adjacent property does have first right for purchase.
I think you're correct, sir. And I certainly would check that before Monday. But my understanding is that some of that discussion's already been had.
Madam Chair, is the request to sell the land alongside you? You made a statement. Kind of, you say you usually don't have trails and trains running alongside. Are you also saying that it's a possibility that we would have a trail and a train alongside if he sells the dinner train?
No. Excuse me. Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, the answer is no. This would be sold with the intention of taking the track out, taking the tie out, not having the train run there. What he would do is sell the train separately. There's a set of tracks that basically run down here, and he would sell that. He would sell the train, the operating train, to another company, and there's a restaurant which he would also close and sell to somebody else who might want to operate.
Well, I would like to be on the train, as Madam Chair, where it runs.
Madam Chair, there was a great deal of conversation about this in the newspapers. I think it was back in December. I think you saw something about it. And depending on what you choose to do, you may want to get your ticket sooner than later.
Well, Representative Singleton?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a procedural question. So obviously this is not a bill or an amendment.
Right.
And so I know we've talked about the Gateway Trail. I'm just wondering how you see that this might come together in our committee.
We have no idea, but I just thought that because it was a new circumstance and we were in our last hearing, that we would grant him the opportunity to talk about this. But beyond that, I think we know nothing.
Madam Chair,
Mr. Abbott.
Don't I wish someday.
Long day.
No, you don't.
Madam Chair, Representative Finkelstein, I know that Representative Dean, who is a member of your committee, has a great deal of interest in this particular project, has actually ridden the rail recently, and may be crafting a bill as we speak.
Okay.
So you might see something before Monday.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, kindly,
there was, Chair. There is one other issue. The gentleman is here, and I don't know if you wanted to speak to the issue. Did you? My understanding is this was an issue heard in the Senate. The bill came in very late to us, and we have not acted on it. But if it appears in the process later, and since he was here, I thought you might just give us a very brief understanding of the Bayport. So, is it a? Yes, it is. Please identify yourself.
Good afternoon. David Bonnet, Mayor of the City of Oak Park Heights, Chair of the Middle St. Clair Water Management Organization. In previous years, we have worked since 1998 to build the storm sewer through the correctional facility at Stillwater, which is essentially 100 years old. And in 2005, we received $1.55 million to complete the last part of this project. And that part of the project is in the wastewater treatment part of the bill. And through the changing processes of Anderson Windows, we hadn't in a timely manner been able to get permission to cross their property to put the last piece of pipe in. It's more expensive to go where the existing pipe is as opposed to replacing it in a new location. So what we need is a little more funds, $150,000 to do the design and meet the inflationary increases over the last 2 years so that we can complete this project. So it would be going with existing bonding funds that already are in existence in the 2005 bonding bill.
So should that issue, at least you've had the opportunity to hear it here, and we thank you for that.
I thank
members,
you, Madam
this Chair. Is, you, those of you who have stuck to the end here, this is quite a...
If you're at the end, you get your project automatically.
Representative Singleton?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you just remind us of what's coming up for next week, please?
Somehow between now and 2:15 on Monday afternoon, we have to create a bill, and we would then present it to the public that day, and then on at 2:15 on Tuesday, we would hope for final passage, because on Wednesday, finance would expect to hear it. There needs to be a day in between, and I don't know if Ways and Means would actually hear it on Friday. If we heard it in finance on Wednesday?
That's not for not, sure yet.
It hasn't been decided.
But that's a possibility.
Okay. Representative Leader moves the minutes of March 15th. Discussion of the minutes?
Yes, I move the minutes.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carries. Minutes are approved. And any other questions or discussion from members? Representative Tingleston.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so to the point about the upcoming meetings, so after next Tuesday, then, what are you foreseeing for our regularly scheduled committee time?
It is free. You can go on to all of the other work that you need to do. So.
And Madam Chair, so as far as site visits for the summer and fall, we'll be working on those soon?
When we conclude this, Jenny Nash will probably shift her thinking to that. We've been making notes, as various members of the committee have suggested tours to us, but between now and the end of session, I think we'll be looking ahead not only to the summer and fall, but to next year. So, as always, you've been very kind and forthcoming with your suggestions, and we just expect that would continue. And we'd probably look to the Greater Minnesota tours when the weather is good, and maybe closer to home when it's not. So if suggestions, invitations are welcome.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair, you're always welcome as a committee to come to Northern Minnesota, Grand Rapids, and we would enjoy that in Northeastern Minnesota.
I think we usually manage all parts of the state, so we will do that. No further discussion. Meeting is adjourned.